And good evening, everybody, and welcome to peoplesinternetradio.com. Vin here, folks. Sunday, 25th of the 10th, AD 2015, 5 past 9, apparently, depending on who you ask and where you are. Welcome, one and all. No video feed tonight, folks, because I've got somebody else with me and they're camera shy. Special surprise guest. We'll get into that in a few minutes. Anyway, first and foremost, just wanted to say thank you to everybody who's been out there spreading the word about PIR, what we're doing here, and the fact that we do have viable, workable, passive solutions. I think it's very important that people remember that while there are plenty of other areas and other groups out there that will fight for you, we're different, I believe, because we will teach you that there is no fight. And or at least, at the very least, that the battle is within. And when you succeed in your inner battles, your outer battles are diminished. And I know that might sound a little airy-fairy and spiritual and all of that to some people, and New Agey. It's not meant to be. It is actually simple. The solutions have to be simple. It was very simple for us to get involved in all of this stuff. And I think over time, we will resolve all the issues and we'll get back to where we're supposed to be. So I'm going to put on another little tune for you and I'll be back in a sec because I just want to settle in my dogs and 3-4 minutes. Put the kettle on. Have a quick cuppa. Okay, so welcome back everybody to... sorry, that was just me being too close to the microphone. So welcome back to peoplesinternetradio.com and I'm here with surprise guest... And I'm going to call him Dale, because that's what we like to call him, and that's what he likes to call himself on the chat box. So say hello, Dale, and we'll see how you're coming in on the VU meter.
You can call me anything you want, Finn, just don't call me too early in the morning.
All right, now, so you're a little, you need to get a little closer. There we go.
That's okay, are we hitting 7 there?
Now we are. Now we're 7x7. Okay, folks, so I do have Dale here with me. I was supposed to have Ciara Young on tonight at about 10:30, or 10 o'clock rather, and we were going to be discussing more on circumcision and whatnot and other related areas. But she was feeling a little poorly and had some of the things she wanted to get done as well. So we're going to stash that for the minute. And we're going to stick with Dale tonight, seeing as he came all the way up to Dublin for the meetup today, which was quite interesting. We had a good little meetup. And we resolved, nominated the candidates to assume the positions within the head school. And that was quite interesting because... There was some surprise, I think, nominations for some people, but others seemed to say, "Oh, yeah, that's a solid place for me," and they felt that they belonged there. What did you think?
I think they just slotted right in there. Mm. Some of them were surprised and that type of thing with the positions that they got, but hey, it's all about performance. You know, it's about stepping forward and just doing whatever needs to be done.
Yep.
Because that's what PIR is all about. Everybody getting involved and building a community.
Exactly. So, hi JMXC, he's just saying hi to us there in the chat box. Hi to everybody else. And don't forget, guys, when you can see that there's, you know, there's 50 odd there in the chat box at the moment. There's many more, of course, listening in other versions and other players around the internet. But that doesn't mean you can't still share, spread the word, and encourage anybody you know to get into the chat box as well and get stuck in. See some, geez, there's a face I haven't seen in a while, or rather an icon, Donegal. Good to see you back in the site. And Ian alone, I haven't seen Ian in a while either, I don't think. Could be wrong. But, so head school, focus, Finn. So head school today, folks, the idea is very simple, and yet, there's complexities to it, but the idea is simple. It's to offer people an understanding of the structure of the so-called system and systems that we're living with today. A lot of people say you're living under it, Dale. I never like that expression. I always prefer to say you're living with it because it's your choice. You know, people don't feel it's their choice probably, but it really is. When we look down, when we drill down.
Everything is all about choice. And choice is all around us. We're making decisions on a constant basis all day long, every day long, 7 days a week. So... You know, it's part of our lives and we've got to make those choices. So it's about making informed choices and informing ourselves. So that's really what the head school will be all about. And there'll be one starting now in the next couple of weeks. So do get involved, because it's one thing listening out there and formulating opinions based on what you're hearing, but it's another thing actually participating and being in a room with people that are like oneself, seeking solutions. Then surely that's the way forward.
Absolutely. So let's go through the nominees for this evening. So my good lady wife, Deborah, has been nominated to teach people about what's known as the roundabout, which is a wonderful concept, the roundabout. It lets you basically visually display, how would you describe it? It's a visual display, if you will, of where you're at, the different exits you can take, and the different, the different options that are available to you, the different roads you can go down.
Yeah, it's a visual representation of a common problem, because we're all, as I say, it's all about choices, but we got to see where we're at and the different options that are available to us. So every time we come to a roundabout on a journey, it's no harm to examine those options and, have a little look down the road and see what it might involve. And you'll only get that feedback, really, from other people that have been down that road and might come back and say, hey, tried that one and maybe it wasn't too great for me, or these are the options that you have within that, you know, because each road leads to another.
Yeah, and I mean, it's even the case that, the different options that are available to people, particularly people in debt, let's face it, most of these issues revolve around finance or the lack thereof. But, so even the likes of MABS and FLAC and Money Bloom there, but they're gone, of course. What was David Hall's? New Beginnings.
New Beginnings, yeah.
You know, even the likes of that could be discussed as an option. You know, these are the different options. And then, of course, you've got the non-recognised groups as such. You've got the likes of the Land League and the Hub and PIR. And all of the different, Common Law Society, OPPT, Commercial Redemption, the Sovereign Citizen ideas. You know, all these ideas do present themselves to people as they go searching through the internet, whether we like it or not.
They certainly do. And the problem is then you see if people are in a spot of difficulty, they see all these options and they don't really know what roads to take, because they mightn't know anybody that's been down those roads and come back to say, well, hey, this was my experience. So just that sharing by getting into a room and eyeballing people that, you learn so much by actually meeting people that it's very, very hard to describe. PIR has been putting out, and MSI, etc. before it, has been putting out simple solutions and discussing these problems through all the various hosts now for years. So perhaps this is just the next stage or the evolution of same, that people of a like mind can come together. And I think most of the people there that are listening on PIR may not fully realise how far they have come and all of the options and the ideas that have been presented to them and helped formulate solutions for them. So by coming together and discussing those, then that just advances one's own knowledge of the different issues and moves one along at a much greater pace.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it was really became obvious to me, especially with my wife, when we went down to Cork, and she was listening to me give a talk, and she was basically saying to me, yeah, Vin, move it along, get to the good stuff, everybody knows this. And no offence to anybody in the room that night, but she then looked around the room and discovered, actually, they all have blank expressions on their faces, and some of them had their jaws hanging open. Clearly none of them realised, or very few of them, realised any of this. And she was actually shocked. And that's when I was saying to her, you don't realise, you've been standing in the house, just absorbing all this for the last 5 or 6 years, and you'd be amazed what you know. And I think that was something I was going to encourage every listener and site member today. If you can, bear this in mind. I'd like to give you some homework, as it were. So for your homework, folks, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to go out there into internet land and to find another website that's something along the lines of what we're at here. Join that website, get involved in their chat and in their forums, let them know we're here, and maybe as passively as you can, try and hone up on your passive language skills. Don't get into any arguments with anybody, but maybe try to encourage them to come and check us out. Take it upon yourself, if you will, to go do that. A, it's good for you. I think it's good to go and hone your skills that way. It's become part of a forum from another, you know, another site. And see if even you can cope. You see, I think PIR to me was always like a little bit of a mini university where people develop and learn and then actually have the ability to utilize the skills that they pick up there. Because and they do pick them up. I mean, it's, you guys are picking up so many skills here. And just by our combined interaction, you know, we are becoming more than the sum of our parts, if you know what I mean, Adele. So I'd love to see that. I'd love to see you guys go out there, join other sites. There's millions of them out there. Interact. Now, I know many of you already do this, and I'm not trying to berate anyone. But what I'm saying is that if you do, try to bring some people back with you. You know, I think even if they're negative, I think we should be able to cope with pretty much anything anyone can throw at us at this stage. Would you go along with that, Dan?
Absolutely. I think, for example, right, if somebody is a vegetarian, most people out there aren't vegetarians, so it might be a good idea to just share how you live or how you practice as a vegetarian, for example. So if we all did a little bit more of that each day, then, hey, we're planting a lot of seeds. And out of small seeds, small acorns, do large oak trees grow.
Absolutely.
On a continual basis. But I think it's no harm to re-emphasize there that most of the people here that are on the chat box and listening in have already been presented with an awful lot of solutions. And it's no harm to share those at all, because there are a lot of people out there suffering day and night.
Well, another way of even looking at it is even say to people, look, here, I have a solution here. I won't say where I got it from for the moment, but even let's say the official offer process, and bring it to another forum and say, hey guys, can anybody break this?
Test it.
Yeah.
Test it and see.
Say, can anybody here prepare to throw this against the wall and see what happens?
Or even just raise the idea of same. You know, because most people out there, if they're caught in a situation, they just can't really see the wood for the trees.
No.
So, hey, let's talk about a few trees here, a few options.
Exactly.
And by doing so, then, we're planting a lot of forests. In time.
Yep. Sorry, I was just a bit distracted there. I'm back. I'm back in the room. So, look, you know, it's... I mean, I absolutely love what we're doing. I love not just what we're doing. I love the way we're doing it. Because the way we're doing it is... I think it's unique. And I think it's so powerful because of its simplicity. It's our intent. The amount of... And I'm not trying to have a go at other groups here, but I'm just saying it's too easy. It's too easy to let the anger take control. I understand people are frustrated. But once the anger gets a hold of you, folks, and you start pointing at the bankers and at the politicians, and, you know, you can find a whole lot of people to point at to blame.
Well, if someone's a vegetarian, for example, just because we used that analogy there earlier, I shouldn't, you know, if I'm a vegetarian, I shouldn't be going out there ramming it down people's throats that they shouldn't be eating meat.
Yeah.
It's okay for me to present passively my view on eating meat, or just say, well, hey, you know, I tried that and found that it mightn't be for me. But ramming it down somebody's throat probably isn't a good idea, because the shutters are going to come down, and I ain't going to win many friends or arguments that way.
In fact, quite the opposite. You'll get shut down. You'll get shut down. And people will almost order a bloody steak to you know, it's almost on, here's one in your eye. Yeah.
Oh, they're going to be flicking the blood at you if they can,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, well, look what happened to Sean Maguire when he was working in that supermarket, of course. The guy had an Irish vegetarian, so we gave him the bloodiest place in the whole building to clean down.
Yeah.
You know, some people are nasty and damaged that way. So, but what I'm trying to say here is, I think our approach is not just unique, I think it's absolutely correct. And I don't say that lightly.
And it's essential.
I think it is. Because it's too easy to point fingers. It's very difficult to point
suggest
at yourself.
And suggest positive solutions.
Yeah.
You know, it's the difference between information and knowledge. There's a lot of information out there. But
and you see, between information and knowledge, the usage of same... The usage of information and the usage of knowledge. There's another word that we use to describe that. And I think wisdom is the best word that kind of locks all that together. You know, knowledge and information is all fine and good and dandy. But but a bit of wisdom on top. You know, when you sit wisdom up there and say, okay, well, I know this and I know, I understand that, but should I do X or Y? And wisdom is something that, you know, again, from a passive perspective, wisdom is something that you can make a reasoned determination about. You can say, yeah, it's a wise move to do X, Y, and Z. You know, the hanging the bankers and the politicians from lampposts, well, so many people might find appealing.
it's an appeal to emotion, though, as opposed to...
It is, and let's face it. Look, let's face it. It's not going to happen. Nobody's going to do it, folks. No matter how loud somebody shouts on the internet and rants in their posts, they sure as hell aren't ever going to do it.
Logic and reason would dictate that to anybody, really, that studies it. I mean, how many bankers are in prison? You know? How many billions were used to bail out the bankers that, you know, our children and grandchildren will probably be paying for quite some time? But yet, how many bankers actually went to the prisons? And who owns the prisons?
And I was going to say, on top of that, how many banks are invested in prisons? They invest, they're investors, folks. They invest in prisons as commercial entities. So, they're not doing that thinking they're going to be the ones ending up there, I can assure you. Now, I know Iceland might be slightly different in a few different areas. You know, I'm sure people are going to go, Iceland, Vin! But, you know, let's be honest. That's not going to happen in America, England, France, Germany. It's just not going to happen.
Or anywhere. Russia, China, really and truly, like...
if bankers are put up against a wall and executed, for example, if that ever happens, that's I'm going to tell you, that's going to be the equivalent of a Stalinistic show trial. That's all that's going to be, folks.
It's like the tribunals and inquiries that go on and go on and go on. They cost millions and millions, but, hey, who gets hung at the end of them? More than likely, it ain't the guys appearing, you know?
No.
These are distractions, so we got to recognize them as distractions and get on with the business of solutions, of practical solutions for practical people.
Exactly. And we are getting there. We do have, you know, I mean, it's not a case, folks, that we're just banging on about the same thing all the time here. You know, the solutions we're offering, they do work. And it's not that they work because there's a flaw in the system. Okay, that's very important. And I know there's many other groups out there who provide what they call solutions, but they're taking advantages of either a pre-existing loophole in the system or a perceived flaw in the system, or they're trying to do a catch-22 with them, get them with their own rules type of thing.
Well, the system loves protesters. Yeah. You know, if I define myself as a protester, I'm effectively handing the baton to the system to beat me with. Because in law, a protester agrees 100% but grumbles a little to whatever the issue is. So I mightn't be calling myself a protester. You know, I might sit down and think about that before I define myself as a protester. I might just call myself an objector, a conscientious objector, for example. But I certainly wouldn't be calling myself a protester if I did wish to object to something, realistically. Because
Why don't they call you an objector?
Well, the media name.
You see,
I've never heard that word in the media, like, you know.
No, but again, you won't.
Who owns the media? Who runs the media? Does the media run for the system, or does it run for,
well,
you know, as a good information?
Let's do a little logic checklist, okay. So if you want to start a media company tomorrow, Dale, who do you go to borrow the money from?
I need investors. I need investors,
need a bank.
Don't I?
You need a bank.
I need a bank, and I want to start signing contracts.
Yeah. So eventually, who gets to call in your note? The bank.
Well, I might need to register as well.
Absolutely. So now you've got two or three people above you in control. I mean, I love this, this phrase they use. Oh, we're regulated by. What regulation is, folks, what it means is, let's say there's a water pipe going into your house. In fact, water meter is a perfect example. There's a regulator on the water meters. And if I'm the regulator and I decide, you know what, I don't want you getting 20 litres an hour, I'm going to control the regulation valve, the regulator, and I'm now going to give you half a litre an hour. You're not in control. I'm now in control. The regulator is in control. Now, of course, then we say, well, banks, the regulators didn't take control of the banks. But the banks were in control of the regulators, folks.
Well, if you've signed a contractor and you've agreed to my regulation of your water supply, then, you know, you'll probably have to expect me to regulate it at some stage. In fact,
is it not to be expected?
It's more than likely to be expected, yeah. In fact, you've, you know, by your signing the contract and that type of thing, you've given me a saleable item. You've effectively given me control, and hey, I'm probably going to float that off at some stage and make a whole lot of cash.
Absolutely. Hypothecation. It's the biggest sin, if you will, and crime man has committed against himself. See, this is what I want to really make people realise, and this is what I hope that when you guys go out into these other forums and other sites to interact, that you let people know. We have done this to ourselves, folks. We signed the contracts, we borrowed the money, we walked into the banks. We asked for masters when we voted, and then we got them. Now, I know and I understand that many people will say, but they told me this, they told me that, I did it in ignorance, I did it in nescience, I didn't know. Sure, I get that. I know, I understand. I did exactly the same thing.
But what do you do now that you do know?
Bingo. First step. To me, first step. Forgive yourself. Forgive yourself. Forgive your family. Forgive your brothers and sisters. You didn't know, right? Second step, which is the bit everybody else, I think, is forgetting. You got to forgive the bankers. You got to forgive the corrupt politicians. If we don't forgive them, we're never going to move on. You can't move on.
Well, Lord, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
Well, they bloody well knew damn well. But but still, we have to be prepared to forgive them. We have to.
Yeah, but they're not in touch with the effects. You know,
that's why we have to forgive them, because they don't, as you say, they're not fully aware. They heard about it. They know about it. You know, we know they know the suicide figures, for example, better than we do.
Well, they may even be massaging those.
Well, more than likely.
It's a distinct possibility, you know, if you control the media and you control the registration process and you preprint all the forms and that type of thing, you probably have a little bit of input there when it comes to the outcome and the statistics and the figures and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So, hey, you know, if you... The piper sort of sets the tune, doesn't he?
Absolutely. Look, I knew somebody, and their job, I get this, many people don't know this job even exists, right? I know somebody, actually I knew two people in this job, and their job, they're civil servants, and their job is when a politician, for example, is going to ask another politician a question, and you'll hear that question being played out in the arena known, I call, Leinster House. And that question... You might think, well, that politician came up with that question. But oftentimes, they didn't. It was the people I know who would, under the instruction of other civil servants, usually secretaries, usually the second in command, never the guy in command, right? Usually the secretary or some other obscure office would come up with the question, and they'd also come up with the answer that the other side was going to respond with. They literally write the bloody script. And the people down in Leinster House, in the pit, they acted out. I swear that's the way it is, folks. I mean, you know, how I can prove this to you, I don't know.
Well, I'd recommend that anybody that disbelieves that or doesn't understand that might take the tour of the Leinster House and Shannon and that type of thing at some stage and have a look at who is in the pit. You know, have a look at the couple of seats that are recording things there and are making suggestions. Like, most people wouldn't... mightn't realise, because it's rarely seen on camera, but the ministers, when they're answering questions, have a whole team, they have a whole section in the Dáil there of their private secretaries who are constantly fielding questions for them if they are asked any questions that they haven't pre-planned. And most of this is pre-planned. Most of it is staged for the media and for the cameras, and people believe what they see and hear without actually questioning them. So, given these guys are giving the ministers the answers, you'd wonder what is their actual understanding of what is going on in terms of legislation and questions and answers and all that type of thing. So, these are the guys that are sort of there, their career civil servants, we'll say. And the government, when it's on recess all summer long, hey, the show goes on, you know. These are the guys that are in the back rooms running the real show. Which is...
Yeah, because, otherwise, when the other guys went off on their, 3-month holiday or whatever, wouldn't the country just come to a standstill?
Well,
I mean, if we were to believe what the politicians told us,
logic and reason would tell us that the show would completely stop. Yeah. If we were to believe
rain would stop falling from the sky, according to them, if they weren't around.
Well, it wouldn't stop the tax bills going out and that type of thing. So
see, this is it. Somebody's in the back room
counting the money.
But the reason I want to make that point is because I was actually told about this quite a number of years ago. It was actually someone in my family, okay, and they weren't being asked to lie exactly, but they were being asked, you know, well, what? Okay, well, let's say it was we're talking about tables in schools, right? Actual physical tables in a particular school, and let's say they've gotten rid of 20 tables, but they need to make it look like actually they've introduced new tables. So they would ask this guy, okay, give me the data on this. So in other words, how many tables are in the school at the moment? And how many new tables are we putting in? So let's say they're putting in 5 new tables, but they, a week ago, just took out 30. And what they'll do is, they'll say, well, I have figures here from the Department of Education's table officer, and he told me we have there was 50 tables in the school, and we've now added an extra 10%. They forget to tell you, or rather don't tell you. It's lying by omission, really. Massaging the figures that, you know, the week previous, they took away 30 tables. And if that's ever found out, they'll say, oh, well, that was part of another scheme whereby we do yada, yada, yada as an overall improvement. You see, they will always tell you it's an improvement. The best line for that that explains it was in 1984 when they were being told the announcement was made this week the chocolate ration is going from, say it was 100 grams, of 100 grams, it's been increased to 80 grams over a certain time period. Now, of course, when you sat down and worked that out, I meant you were getting less chocolate. But, of course, everybody was saying, oh, isn't that double plus good? But that was their newspeak. And that's what these people do. It's newspeak, folks. And it's not designed to fool you. Okay?
It's designed to play to your ears.
Yeah, it's a particular tune, and they're hoping, well, if you're humming the Fianna Fáil tune, or the Fine Gael tune, or the Labour tune, you'll sing this song with them. And, you know, Labour will then, you see, sing the other tune. And they know, well, the Labour people will sing that song for them. So we have this chorus going on. And if you have 3 different audios, there's a reason you listen to one song at a time on your music player, folks, right? You try listening to 2 or 3 different songs, even your favourite songs, on 3 different sound devices set at the same level of volume.
I can't be listening to that.
You're not hearing anything.
It's not making any sense to you.
So. Yeah. And that's what's happening to the nation, as it were, to the people of the nation. Nobody knows who the hell to listen to. So our message, if you will, from PIR, is stop listening to all of them. Listen to yourself. Don't even listen to us. Hear what we have to say. And you assess. You evaluate. You decide. You decide. Sorry, do you want to come in there, Doug?
And make your own determinations.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, reasoned, ethical.
Yeah. Ethical and moral and reasonable. Moral
and sensible. Determinations based upon your own information. So I think that's a brilliant idea to research more and interact more with other groups and with other people, because we're all of the same cut or cloth on this island. So we need to be intermingling more and learning from each other all the time.
Well, on top of that, look, I'm going to say, all you guys in the chat box, 99% of you are ready and able to do this. Absolutely. I mean, you know, even relatively new members, I've seen people pick this up so fast. And you do have the abilities to do it, guys. I mean, I don't know, maybe if some of you don't believe in yourself, well, I want to let you know, I believe in you. I believe in your abilities. If you don't, but I do.
Well, I believe that you believe in our abilities. I think JJ's comment there in the chat box there is very telling. He said, it's like the 3-for-1 in supermarkets. You have to see the price per kilogram.
Exactly.
Don't be fooled.
Exactly. Looks good.
Don't be deceived, really.
Yeah. Let he who will be deceived be deceived. You know, I know when people find that out, or they come across that statement, for example, they think, oh, these people are therefore purposely deceiving me. They sort of are and they sort of aren't. You can only be deceived, right, if you allow yourself to be deceived. And a lot of people get very angry when they realise that. Mm. You know, because an awful lot of it is, well, yeah, I believed it. Therefore, I actually deceived myself.
And that's the nub of the question. And that creates all sorts of conflicts then in a person's mind. You know, how could I allow myself to be so deceived for so long by so many? But hey, forgive yourself and get on with it, because that's a useless, really, or it's not serving you well to really be, you know, fall out with yourself, really, or to be over-analysing yourself in that regard, because it's a sort of a wasted energy.
Oh, it is. Oh, it is. And see, this is where the anger comes. So, for example, you know, I shouldn't laugh at this, but it is kind of funny. You know, when I've had people come to me and, you know, relatively new, and they say, hey, you know, you know, when people are excited when they found out all this stuff, they go, did you know money was, it was created out of fresh air? And I look at them and I go, well, what the hell did you think it was created from? And that usually stops them. They sit back and they go, actually, that's right. What the hell was it created from? And they kind of go, yeah, hang on, I got to be like 45 or 50 years of age, whatever, and I've never actually considered where the hell does the value, or perceived value, or otherwise, come from for what we're calling money. And, you know, when you say to somebody, or when they say to you, rather, oh, it's just, they just conjure up out of fresh air. Well, they sort of do and they sort of don't. They can't do it without you. And this is where this, one of these other be the secured party online creditor stuff came from.
It's your perceived consent.
Right. So they would say, well, we are there for the creditor, which is sort of true and sort of not true. It sort of is and it sort of isn't. I mean, this is the problem with a lot of this stuff, folks. There's a lot of very tempting stuff out there. And I don't like to sit here and say, but we're the only ones who are correct. But I'm going to say it. I actually think we're the only ones who are correct in many, many regards. Not everything we're talking about, but because of the perspective and the intention.
But what I like about it is, you're also saying, and PIR generally, all the hosts are saying, well, hey, if you don't believe it, test it. Make your own determination. You know, let's see if we can break it. Mm. And there's a lot of very bright minds out there. So, hey, attack it with logic and reason. And if you can break it, that's invited. And that's rather unique out there, because I don't hear RTE saying, hey, if you've got a complaint there, let's sit down and talk about it. And we'll amend issues. They'll send you away to...
They'll say, put it in writing and send it to our complaints department, and we'll file it under something.
Yeah, or that division we've created over there, go over and talk to them, you know. Yeah. Similarly there with the guards and with a lot of agencies. You see, you're kept down at the public desk quite often, and most people...
You want to talk to the organ grinder, not the monkey.
Absolutely, yeah. It's up on the fourth floor there that you'll get the tea and biscuits and the nice chocolate biscuits at that. Mm. And you'll get things done rather than, calling in and being handed a form and say, go away there and fill that out and la-di-da-di-da. That wastes a lot of time and energy. And people get that. People accept that offer day in, day out. They're all offers. And the system is designed to keep you busy if you wish to partake of that sort of activity. So perhaps do a little bit more thinking and, when you say it, mean it.
Well, as Darby Seven said there in the chat earlier, it's all very simple. We consent, and he gave a what the F, and he's correct. We have been consenting for... Now, you see, that's the good news. That is good news, because it's based on your consent. That's why we're saying you can do something about it. Because if it wasn't based on your consent, folks, here's what I'd be telling you. You're screwed. There's nothing you can do about it.
You're screwed and you're screwed.
Yeah, you know, it's like, well, good night all. You know, the shortest radio show.
The truth is, you ain't screwed. You got options, and you got to know what those options are and start utilising them.
Absolutely. But and the first thing to do is to set your mind right. Mm. Now, that's the wonderful aspect, I think, of the hedge school idea, the way it's been laid out. It's to set your mind right, not to steer your mind, not to put your mind somewhere where you're unsure or unsafe, but to say to you, okay, let's come sit down, let's have a talk. We'll put somebody up there who'll say, well, here's a group of options, like the roundabout idea. And then there'll be another guy who'll say, okay, he's going to talk about trivium. And then we'll have another guy, and he's going to talk about the seven basic elements of contract law. And then there'll be another guy who'll talk about, say, money, its creation, its operation, and its function. And then maybe another guy might do a little talk on maintaining and preserving your privacy. And when all that's done, you see, sorry if I missed them. I know I missed a few. Go on.
No, I must have been out of school quite a bit there, because I missed all those in school. I don't think they were ever. Yeah. I don't think they were ever mentioned when I was in. You know.
No.
And I spent 17 years or something in the education system. You know.
It's the bits that you should have been taught about, and you see. I mean, the educational system and hold of the hand. You know, a minister could even say, oh, well, we assumed the parents were doing that. But how can your parents do that, folks, if they didn't understand, they didn't know, they spent 30 years with their back to the wheel to educate you and get you where you're at? You know, so...
They were busy working, providing, and listening to... You know, they may not have seen this evolution of change that... seems to have occurred where there's more and more media. Just remember now that they were born and reared in an era when they were lucky if they had one channel coming into the house, maybe starting at 6 o'clock in the evening or something, you know, and running till 11 o'clock or whatever. And on a Friday night, they watched the Late Late Show. And
radio and print media, especially back when, you know, when I were a lad, as they say, that's what influenced my family. I mean, I could see it. You know, I remember coming down for breakfast in the morning and we had one of these big old, do you remember these big old radios covered in leather?
Yeah.
Jeez, they were everywhere. I think Hector Gray brought in 10 shiploads of them or something. But that was turned on. And as soon as the news started, you, as a child of my house, you knew, shut up. The father is sitting at the table and he's listening to the news. And you daren't make a sound. As soon as it's over, you know, no problem, rummage away. But... You know,
but that was real news, because there was only one murder every few months in the country.
Do you know, I don't ever remember listening to anything like murders being announced as news on RTE when I was a kid. I remember, IRA and sectarian violence, and that would be reported. But I never remember hearing, oh, somebody like a normal Joe murdered another normal Joe. It was like, it didn't happen, really.
No, it didn't happen, because it was, a lot of the time, it was dealt with locally and that type of thing, or these type of things weren't...
Well, you know, didn't escalate to that degree.
They didn't escalate. No. Most of the time people sat down around the table and they had a cup of tea and they said, right, look, Johnny down the road there is acting up a little bit. You know, will you talk to him, or will we call in the priest there to this one, or what will we do there to address this issue?
And there are ways and means.
Yeah, Johnny was straightened and it was all good, you know. But nowadays, we got a lot of Johnnies living next door to us and we may not even... speak to them or know who they are or know their surname or know anything at all about them. So, you know, the first we hear of Johnny now is it's all over the news there that Johnny's done something very exceptional and very strange, because possibly because his neighbours aren't talking to him and that social regulation isn't occurring.
There are,
you
people
know, that
living
social chat
surrounded by people and they're lonely. I find that bizarre. I mean, like where I am here, I know all of my neighbours.
And yet they have 500 channels coming into the house, and they have, satellite reception, and, you know, if you do meet them, what are you talking about? You're talking about Arsenal playing whoever, and that's not really conversing at a very very realistic level. So
I call that safe conversation. It's safe social conversation, you know.
Well, we bought into a lot of the fears there, you know, and a lot of the fears are media driven and that type of thing. So we need to get real, basically, and have a few more chats and interact on a more positive level with people, because people love that. I mean, that's what life is all about, you know. If I'm a parent there and I'm having difficulty, for argument's sake, with a teenage child or something like that, I'd love to hear a few suggested solutions. Because, you know, or whatever the story is, if my child is being bullied in school, or, you know, if a form has come in suggesting that my son now gets the vaccine that they were giving to girls there a couple of years ago, what's all that about, you know? I mean, how am I to know if I don't interact with people and say, well, you know, what's actually happening here? You know, why are these offers coming in? Why is there more and more pharmaceuticals? Why are there... more and more people giving their power over to doctors and, you know, media-driven hype, and what's actually going on here, you know? So we need to get a little bit real here and start interacting more. And that can only be positive.
Well, I think, you know, the beginning of change, it's in your head. And you might think, well, I only know a few people, and sure, what can I do? Actually, you can change the world. Every single one of us can change the world. Think of the names that spring to mind for the people who did, in fact, change the world. Rosa Parks did it by sitting on the seat of a bus. Malcolm X did it. Now, he did it with huge rallies. But Rosa Parks, for example, she just did it by just sitting on a seat on a bus.
Gandhi did it by taking a stroll.
But what I'm trying to get across here is he had thousands and millions of supporters, and so did Malcolm X. But Rosa Parks didn't. Rosa Parks was just Rosa Parks. And that's what was incredible about that.
But she made a decision to affect change in her life.
Yeah, yeah. So what I'm saying here is, see, if you're at home and you're on your own and you don't have a lot of friends, that doesn't mean you too can't change the world.
Absolutely not.
And for a positive, you know, obviously in a positive manner.
Change starts with one, and be the change you wish to see.
And if you need inspiration, go and look online for other individuals like that who made the singular individual who made a difference. The guy in Tiananmen Square springs to mind. He just stood in front of a tank with a shopping bag. A plastic bag is all he had, wasn't it?
When I was in London in 89.
The whole planet stopped when he did that.
Yeah, I met several Chinese that were hiding out over there that had left these were young students that had come over from China. And they had T-shirts that they had inscribed in blood by other students and that type of thing. Quite a few of them had been killed, and a lot more of them would have been killed had they stayed where they were. But that young man that stood with his shopping bags or whatever in front of that tank.
Did we ever find out who he was?
I don't think so, He went to ground afterwards. I don't think that he popped his head up again for quite a while, you know. But I think we'd all love to meet him and shake his hand and be inspired by how he was inspired and see what seeded that, really. And I don't think when he set off that morning that he'd planned to do anything like that.
I doubt it. I mean, he looked like he was just, well, he had a shopping bag in his hands, right?
He had a shopping bag in each hand, if I'm not wrong. But yet, that's one of the most inspiring images that most people would think of if they were asked to list their top 10, you know?
Yeah. Now, I can think of another moment. There was some animal rights activists. They'd gotten into a chicken farm, you know, little chicks. And I don't know if you know this, folks. Not exactly a pleasant conversation, but I think it's the male chicks when they're born. They separate them out, and they basically go through a blender alive. Not pretty, but that's the way industrial farming operates. And they had broke in.
It ain't a natural process, you mean?
Well, yeah. Well, they were processed, don't we?
Okay. Well, they've all had their tea now, so carry on.
Well, the point is, some police officers arrived, and they were there to resolve the issue. And they were doing it in their usual way. And one of the animal rights protesters or objectors, or call them what you will, they said, okay, I'll tell you what, officer, you press the button to start the machine to start blending liquidizing the live chicks, and that stopped him dead in his tracks. And I thought, that was powerful. Did you see that one?
No.
That was powerful. Here's this big burly soldier. I mean, what I thought was funny was he was clearly ready to kick the living crap out of everyone there. And he looked like he would have went home and said, you know, well, I did my job today, wifey. I went and got some naughty protesters, cracked them on the head, and kicked them out. But when it came to little, cute, fluffy yellow chicks, he couldn't do it.
But you see, that's the test then, you see. Would you actually press the button yourself, you know? I mean, it's very easy to tell somebody else to press that button, you know.
Somebody comes into that factory every morning and presses that button.
Yeah. But most of them do it because they're told to do it and they don't think about it.
No.
But if they actually thought about it, how many people would press that button?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's like, well, you know, does that button get pressed before people arrive to work? Is that machine already running? And so as they're selecting the chicks onto the conveyor belt, or do they have to say, right, we've enough now, start the machine? it's an interesting dilemma. Is that the word?
It's certainly a dilemma. But yet that button gets pressed. Big industry make sure that there's somebody down there that probably doesn't think too much about it, and that they press that button every morning.
Mm.
because the show has to go on. Hey, we got a lot of guys employed here and a lot of chicks to process.
Now, and again, I understand, I knew somebody once who worked in an abattoir. Actually, I knew a few of them. And some of them, it actually sent them half mad. They just became, what's the word?
Affected by it.
Callous was the word. In certain regards, you know, they were damaged by it, to be honest. It's damaging, you know. I mean, the difference between going out and, say, you know, doing hunting as opposed to, you know, working on a production line and just going ping, ping, ping with a bolt gun, it's not the same thing, right? I mean, it has to affect you differently. Like, if you're hunting to eat and survive, you know.
Well, it's not. It's the difference between survival and unknowing acceptance, I suppose, isn't it?
Mm. Mm.
And that's not an easy one to resolve in most people's minds.
I mean, I had a stint where turkeys. There's a guy up the way here. Does turkeys at Christmas, and of course he needs their next run. And I was asked to do it, but I couldn't.
Mm.
I was willing. I thought I was willing, but no. I just nope.
Well, years ago, I worked in a meat factory myself, and my job was, or part of my job was, relabeling meat for export.
When you say relabeling?
Relabeling as in adding a few kilos here and there and that type of thing, you know? And subsequently, tribunal... might have written to one and that type of thing, and one wasn't available, like, for tribunals and that type of thing. One couldn't really see an outcome.
Mm.
But
there was no favourable outcome in your end of the woods.
No, but I mean, one was young, and you know, one drank quite a bit, and needed a lot of money to keep the show on the road and that type of thing, you know. So you made choices unknowingly at the time. But if I was asked to do that now, I might be considering the people on the other side that are paying for all this. And hey, you know, if you're paying for a box of, for say, 25 kilos of prime meat, and I'm after relabeling that from something that would be considered offal, 18 kilos of offal in this country, I mightn't be that ready to stamp that up and put my sane in nature to that one, you know? Because somebody has to open that box on the other side, and if they're eating offal and calling it steak, sirloin, that probably... probably...
I'd have an issue with that,
yeah.
Well... One of the other things I'd like to get into as well is, say, the likes of this actually came up. I think we kind of brushed on across this last week, but let's say, for example, right, when you were working in, say, McDonald's or Mac, whatever, Acme and Co. How about that? You know, when a delivery would come in, and I used to have this when I worked in other places when I was doing my thing, and I my father actually taught me this, that, for example, if I work in Acme and Co. and a delivery driver comes up with a couple of boxes of photocopier paper or whatever and asks you, can you sign for the delivery? He told me, always sign the name of the company you're working for. He said, never put your own name down there.
Mm.
Now, I did that for years, no matter where I was. And I'm talking about this because of the solicitor's letters things, folks. However, I remember I was working in one particular company and the boss came down to me and he said, what the hell is this? The company that, you know... or delivering stuff, I've asked, like, who's signing these like this? And I was in the dispatch department, and he said, he knew stuff was coming in and going out where I was, and he said,
Of Acme and Co.
Who's doing this? And I said, well, I'm doing it. He said, but you're supposed to sign your name. I said, why? I'm not the company. And if anything's wrong with it, it's you they'll be suing, or you'll be suing them. I'm not involved in this in any way, shape, or form. I'm just employed here. And if you want me to sign something, I'm no problem. I'll sign as you. I'll put Acme and Co. down, no problem. But I'm not putting my moniker, as it were, down. Caused a bit of a ruckus for a while, and eventually they actually said they went. I remember this was a good 20 odd years ago, and they went and they checked with a solicitor's firm, and the solicitor's firm actually said, he came back at me and he said to me, they actually complimented you on doing it that way. He said, because everybody should be signing. In fact, everybody who starts working in a corporation should be told, sign for, you know, for in and out that way. You should be signing the company name. Now, where it gets a bit interesting is, so where you have solicitors firms, and the people in the solicitors firm are signing, and putting stuff out in their so-called company name. And that's where it's incorrect. So in other words, if I was working on Acme & Co, I'm not supposed to sign Acme & Co to send stuff out. But if we're receiving stuff in, I'm supposed to sign it that way. Mm. Now, you could also sign after that in a little PP with your initials or VIN in this department, for example. Mm. That would be okay too. But you're still the corporate employee when doing it. I'd just be interested in anyone else's opinions on that. Has anyone else done anything like that? Anyone else any experiences like that in the chat box there or on Facebook or whatever? But I think that's important. I mean, do you see where liability is going? It's transferring liability. Or rather, it's not allowing it to be applied to you.
It's deferring same.
Yeah.
Or an attempt to defer same.
Right. Now, the reason I'm saying that, folks, is technically, you are an employee. If you have a PPS number, you are an employee of Ireland Inc. Now, because of the 1949 so-called Republic of Ireland Act, that is actually how you should be signing for things if you're signing, if you want to. Now, it's by choice. I'm not telling you what to do. But I'm just saying, if one were to sign or one felt compelled to sign something, that's the signature that should be going there, not yours. So have a little think about that, folks. Stick the kettle on, have a cup of tea. I'm going to play two songs back just after this. My doggies are scraping at the door here and I just want to see what's wrong. And there you go. Welcome back to peoplesinternetradio.com. Hopefully you had a chance to go get a cup of scald and listen to a few tunes while you were doing it. Some of you are probably dancing around the kitchen still. Stop. We're back.
Put that chair down.
Yeah, put the brush handle down. Okay. So welcome back to People's Internet Radio. As we say, a couple of questions and a couple of comments and a couple of things going up the chat box there. But sure, look, folks, if something you feel wasn't addressed, or you have a question and we miss it or whatever, by all means, we're happy enough to go back and address anything you want. Don't forget, we have the call-ins. 01-44-33-09 if you want to call in by phone. And Vincent Temp 1 over Skype, VincentTemp, and the digit 1. I saw Dan Arnold had put some things in there while the music was playing. Dan, that's an interesting little situation. Would you consider calling in maybe? That would be interesting. If you want to, that's fine. If you don't want to, of course, that's absolutely fine too. but it is the right question, isn't it? And Pat V, of course, responded to him. Can the entity sign anything? No, of course not. But you see, people, here's the deal. People don't know. They don't realise, folks. You know, myself and Del were talking here during the break, and it came up like, you know, we know they're basically Punch and Judy. You see, when they sign, when you get a job in a legal firm, for example, you're getting a job as Mr. Punch or Mrs. Judy. And, you know, who would accept a letter from the Punch and Judy show signed Mr. Punch and think it's legitimate? You'd want whoever had his hand up the puppet's ass. That's the guy you want to sign. Now, that guy in the corporate world essentially does not exist. He actually does exist with a Punch and Judy show. It's a man. But with the corporate world, they don't exist. So everybody, to go along, to get along, as it were, we've all accepted this down through the years, you see. That's why people sit back and they balk and they go, well, we've always done it this way. Or, of course that's legitimate. Of course it is.
Have we, though?
But we sort of have and we sort of haven't. This is you see, we're in that grey area now, you see. Many of us, of course, have realised that's the grey area is actually black and white. So either he is or either he isn't. Either there's a Mr. McDonald's or there isn't. Either there's a Mr. Federal Express or there isn't. I mean, the legal world deals with that by saying, well, we'll apply it to corporate personhood and we look for the mens rea of the controlling mind for that particular decision. That's what they did, for example, remember the blood scandal here with the hepatitis blood scandal. They said, well, who was in operation at the time and who was making the decisions, and we'll apply the corporate mind to them, or we'll say they had it, as it were. So, you know, but we're still doing it, folks. We're, you know, how many of us are going to go to a job tomorrow And if a delivery comes in, we're going to sign for it. Now, I suggest you should be signing the name of the company you work for, more than likely, because that's who you're the actor for. You know, you only agreed to be employed by them. You didn't agree to take and accept liability for them. And I'm actually going to tell you something else. It's actually the same for banks too, folks. Technically, when you're signing in banks and signing for mortgages and all that, you shouldn't be signing the way you've been signing. Well, I think we all know that now at this stage. If you're new to People's Internet Radio tonight and you're kind of a little miffed, maybe check out some of the podcasts. My podcasts are there. You can just click VN Live in the schedule and podcast thingy there underneath the player, and I'll take you straight to my page for podcasts, or any of the other guys, in fact, as well. Do you want to get into something, Dale? You look like you have something on your mind.
I've quite a few things on my mind, as always, okay. But hey, let's narrow them down, okay? I suppose it's all about contract, and there are only a few basics really in contract, or to my understanding anyway. I've been around this a while, and I've tried to simplify it for myself. We have offer, acceptance, performance, and consideration. You know, the rest are basically beside the point, really. If I'm in difficulty in relation to a contract, those are the four that I need to look to. So, you know, I need to possibly seriously consider at least performing to the best of my ability. I've probably already accepted. I did make an offer at some stage, and that's all ancient history. But living in the now, which is where we all got to live, I got to deal with my issues. So perhaps that's the official offer.
Well, you see, this is it. You see, what what we've done is, folks, the contracts have built up upon contract upon contract upon contract. They intersect. They overlap. They, you know, think of spaghetti junction. And that's just your basic contracts. And then, of course, you have everybody else's contracts who are interacting with your contracts. I mean, when you buy a car, for example, you're buying something that's an accumulated contract. But it probably has, every car produced, for example, probably has a couple of billion different contracts involved, from the guy who invented it, who designed it, the people who dug the ore out of the ground, and the assembly line, the people who built the factory for the assembly line, the people who fed the workers. You know, by the time you take delivery of a car, there are billions of contracts in that, and then you go and apply another one to it. You are now the owner, inverted commas, of the car. And you see, realizing that, that's going to help you. I know it sounds confusing, but it will help you when you realize that even though there's all these contracts in place, you are the one handling it now. That puts you in prime position. You're in pole position, as it were. You get to decide.
You're the guy at the wheel.
There you go.
Where do you want to take this car?
Yep.
You know, and that's an awakening in itself, really. You can, you can start taking it all apart and spend a long time trying to rebuild it afterwards. Or you can say, well, hey, where the hell do I want to take this?
Yeah.
And that's really about getting on with it then. And, I need to know where the indicators are. I need to know where the gear shift is. And I need to know what to do to get it in gear. But yep. I start in first and move forward. You know, if I want to get somewhere, I'd, putting it into reverse and taking it into the garage and taking it all apart ain't really of much service to me.
What's this to say? First things first.
First things first, yeah. And so I want to stay in the seat that I'm sitting in, and I don't want to give up control of that, so got to realise where I am and basically get on with it, or else I ain't going to get to B if I'm trying to leave A. And the hardest part of that decision is probably to just decide to turn that key and get on with it.
Yeah, so all the contracts you've involved yourself in, you have done it. I mean, I've done it, folks. We do it. Contracting is a thing human beings do. Right? Beings, right? Okay. Some people might have a problem with the word human. Contracting is what we do. We would find it almost impossible to go through a single day without contracting with somebody else.
I was going to object there, but you might, some people might call me a protester, so I wasn't going to raise that.
So, but, you know, for example, I mean, if you want to really nail this down, folks, I mean, Pat Fee goes through all this intimately on Monday nights. We're trying to, we're kind of glossing over a lot of this here tonight. But essentially...
And he has a beautiful way of presenting that. But
he does, he does.
You know, I listened to Pat Fee for a while, and I know I didn't get it for a while, and I didn't see the beauty of the man's simplicity. Not that he's a simple man, he's a complex man like us all.
Exactly.
But, you know, he has it fairly well defined there on Monday nights. So, Scott...
Well, that's what I'm going to say, that if you're unsure of any of this, make sure you tune into Pat Fee on Monday nights, folks, because he'll just gently, slowly, and steadily take you through all the different elements.
And nail it down for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is what we all need at a time when, you know, if we're in a little bit of turmoil, we need a good dose of common sense, and we need it frequently.
Yeah.
So, and we might have to take it for quite a while before it actually starts remedying our situations or our whatever's afflicting us.
Now that said,
but it's there.
That said, though, you see, what I think this is a good exercise. Get into the present mind, as it were, and let's say you want to buy a pint of milk in a shop. Get into your present mind, locate yourself in the present, and walk into the shop remembering, okay, I'm going in here, I want something that's in here, somebody else produced it, well, the cow produced it, somebody else, you know, filtered it, and homogenized it, and pasteurized it, and probably poisoned it.
All to
yeah.
At very least.
Right. Stuck it in a plastic container, and you're walking in here, and you've a document. You're going to hand him a document, a euro note, more like what's recognized as a euro note, and you're going to hand it to the guy behind, or gal behind the counter. They're going to give you the milk. You're going to take it away, and you're going to leave them with a piece of paper. And we call that paying for things. But we're not actually paying for things. We're only affecting payment. Because, one, you have done nothing for the cow. You've done less for the planet, because the plastic jug, when you're done with it, where's that going to go? Right? That's going to sit in a tip head somewhere for God knows how many hundreds of years.
You mightn't have done a lot for yourself, because if you actually knew it, the milk, or what we call milk, what's sold in the supermarkets and the stores, was actually whey. It was known as whey, and it was returned from the creamery to feed to the pigs not too long ago. So, you know, if whey is milk, then... milk obviously isn't whey, so we gotta we gotta realize there's been an awful lot of good extracted out of that before we got it.
Because what, and I'll jump in there, because it's what comes straight out of the cow, folks. That's what milk is. Everything that happens to it after that, it's, you know, you can call it all sorts of things, but it's not milk. I see in America people are going, oh, the raw milk people. I go, no, it's not raw milk.
It's just
that's milk. That's what milk is. You know,
it's like all this labelling of organics.
Yeah. Well, you see, they're getting in trouble because they're putting titles onto it.
Yeah, what's an organic carrot? Hey, isn't that just a carrot?
It's a carrot,
isn't that
right?
What I always grew up with and knew as a carrot.
Right.
So what's this organic carry-on? Because apparently that requires registration of the carrot farmer, and it requires a lot of processing and labelling and contracting and... you know, payments, and it drives up the cost quite a bit. And
well, I'll tell you what I did with the guys in America, the raw milk guys, right?
It affects the carrot.
Absolutely. Well, it's no longer a carrot, right? Once you change it into something else. It just looks like a carrot. Similar to a carrot. It's carrot-like.
Okay.
I was talking to some of these raw milk guys, and I said, look, you want to know how to... Somebody had told him, you should probably have a chat with Vian. He knows something about some of this stuff. And I said, look, you want to sell your raw milk, or what you're calling raw milk? And they said, yeah. I said, fine. And we're told you can tell us how to do it. I said, yeah. You're probably not going to like it, though. And they, well, because a lot of these guys had, like, you know, years and years and years of crap, and they were in the legal world, right? So I said to them, and you can put up a sign. Are they saying, and can we put up a sign? I said, you can indeed. And I said, what will we put on the sign? And I said, simply put the following on the sign. An arrow pointing down where you stack whatever it is you're selling. And say, this for sale. And they were like, what? Don't call it milk or raw milk? Or I said, no. Don't call it anything. Just call it this. And it's for sale. And it's so many for so much. Only one guy did it. And he's the guy, every now and again I get contact from him, and he says, nobody comes, he's doing his thing, and he's selling this. And no state agencies bother him.
What are you saying? He's selling this for that?
This for that. Now, I want a lot of people in the alternative health movement, if they're listening, to think that through. Again, you know, were you caught with cannabis in your pocket? Did you have an open container in your vehicle? You know,
Do I recognise that as this?
Exactly. Let's get back to this and that, folks. It's easier. It's easier. You see, if they say, well, when you say this, do you mean yada, 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 cannabis or drugs or... Well, if you say yes, you're the one who's agreed that this is no longer this. It's now apparently...
That.
Something other than. And the something other than, if it's a title, and if they have, you know, statutes, acts and rules and regulations and bylaws and municipalities connected to all those notions and ideas, and guess what? They're going to decide or make a determination that you're somehow infringing it. Because look, we printed on our document the selling of raw milk is now illegal. And you're selling raw milk. But if you're selling this, then you're not.
Well, if you're apparently providing milk, is it an issue for you?
Well, they need you to say it, you see. They will, the agents always say to you, are you selling raw milk? Or how much raw milk have you got here? How much raw milk have you sold here today? All you got to do is just keep it simple. Do you know, I'm just selling this. This. They say, well, that's raw milk, isn't it? It's like why when a guard pulls you over, the cops pull you over. Do you know why I stopped you? They're not asking you that to see if you actually know. They don't give a crap. You know, they don't, it's not about, do you know?
They're asking you to give life to it.
They need your testimony. They need you to connect. They need you, think of an electrical socket in your wall, folks. And I say to you, lick your fingers and stick them in the sockets. Well, you know what's going to happen, right? You're going to get the shock of your life. And that's what they're doing when they say, do you know why I stopped you? What they've done is they've brought two electric mains cables together and they've held them out to you and they've basically said to you, hey, would you like to stick your hands across these two cables? And we, like idiots, up to now, generally go, certainly, officer, and we grab a hold of the live and the neutral.
You provide the connection.
Yep. You have to.
And hey, if you suffer the aftershock, then that's your issue. They're going to walk away and say, hey, yeah, I just held it out to the guy.
Now, perfect. I'm delighted to see that in the chat box from competent witness, no less. I'm delighted he picked up on that. I know who that is. So he said, so what do the court mean when they say all that and those? I'll tell you precisely what they mean. They mean nothing. Nothing.
No, not the above.
If you were to say to them, for example, you have in your document all that and those, is that correct?
Can you explain, Sam?
Can you show it to me?
Yeah.
What colour is it? How does it feel? Is it rough or smooth?
Yeah. There'd be some interesting questions.
It just turns into gibberish, you see. And they have to, no, come now. You know, you're being awkward. You're the one who wrote it in the bloody document.
Hey, I'm just asking you what... I'd just like you to explain to me. Because I just don't understand what it is you're trying to propose.
Yeah. It's just... What I love about all this is the fact that it's funny, folks. That's one of the... I mean, I've often said it, you know, myself and Obi-Wan on the research team and a few other guys, we'd be reading through material, legal books now. We're in real serious volumes and tomes, you know, serious works of great intellect.
Good stuff.
And we'd be reading it like the fucking... Excuse my friend, sorry. We'd be reading it like the dandy. I'd be laughing my ass off reading some of this stuff, and so will Obi-Wan. Because we've seen it for what it is, and it is laughable. It actually is. It's funny. It's funny, folks. I mean, once you get to understand this stuff and you can see it for what it is, you realise it's quite humorous, an awful lot of it. We, at the meetup today, for example, Mr. T was mentioned, the wonderful Mr. T, and, you know, we were having a conversation. I think we were talking to Jimmy Plummer, and he nodded in agreement because he knew damn well, you know, Mr. T might say to somebody, well, hey, you know, so are you enjoying yourself or, you know, whatever he'd say. And they might say, oh, Mr. T, you know, I've got troubles. I borrowed 50,000 euros or something like this and I can't pay it back. And he might just something, you know, say something along the lines of, you did? As a question. And they'd say, yes, I did. And he would laugh. He'd laugh his head off. And people would get upset. You'd say, well, I told him I borrowed £50,000, I can't pay it back, and he laughed. I said, no, he was laughing because, not because, he's not laughing at you, although sometimes I think he may have been. But he'd laugh because he was like, stop taking it that way, stop looking at it that way, stop feeling that way about it. It's a joke. It's like a huge, huge joke is being played on us, folks. In fact, we're playing it on ourselves. It's like the ultimate knock-knock joke. It's, knock-knock, who's there? Right? So, knock-knock, who's there? I'll tell you a knock-knock joke now, right? So, you start it. Go ahead.
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Knock-knock.
See what I mean? Suddenly, you got stuck, right?
Who is there?
But, you know,
got to think now.
Now, what I did is, because I did that so fast, I knew you were relaxed there and you wouldn't be able to catch up with it, right? So, that's a little thing I do sometimes to show people. That's what they do. You know, do you know why I stopped you? That's the same thing. They say, tell me a knock-knock joke. And you go, knock-knock. And they say, who's there? Now you're stuck.
But most people, if they're asked, like, do you know why I stopped you? Oh, well, I may not have seen the light there, back there, or whatever, you know.
Yeah, see, just give them testimony.
Yeah. I've just testified now against myself that I didn't see a light and that I went through it. And
well, that there was a light.
Yeah.
Two, that you didn't see it, and therefore you were negligent.
And three, it may have been red or amber. Hey.
Yeah.
I just joined a lot of dots there.
And he didn't stop you. You stopped yourself.
Yeah. I think I know somebody that at one point was stopped like that, and the guard came to the window anyway, and he said, do you know why I stopped you? And he said, well, you know, I can back it up here and have another go at it there if you want to try again. Like, unless you're Superman, I don't think you'll stop me. You know? Yeah. I think I pressed a pedal here or something to grind it to a halt, like, but I don't think you actually stopped me. If you want to try there, I'll, if you want to stand out there again, let's go at it again. And this time we'll see if I'll stop, you know.
And you see, they don't have it explained to them. What you're doing as an officer in this instance is you're trying to gain subject matter jurisdiction. They're not told that. What they're told is, when you pull someone over, just ask them, do you know why I stopped you? Now, imagine if you were a guard or a police officer in the academy and you stick your hand up when they tell you about that and you go, why do we ask that?
We're trained to ask it, aren't we?
You see, you'll get a sidewards answer. You won't get a direct, well, the legal... No, or let's say you say, is there a precise legal reason why we ask that? I think you'll be found, you're not suitable for being a police officer.
No. I think you'll be drummed out of the academy.
Yeah. Somebody get rid of that guy, right? He's too smart.
I think acting school is for that guy there. Police Academy 17 is coming up there. Maybe he should enroll for that one, you know?
But we have to think these things through, folks. We have to ask ourselves, why are they doing that? Because they all do it.
Simple questions, critical questions.
Yeah. Critical questions. That's the word, critical.
Because it's critical for us if we don't.
Yeah, you'll be in a critical condition.
What I loved about the meet-up there today, Vin, was, there were a couple of issues raised. Some, a couple of different guys said, hey, I got an issue with this or I got an issue with that. What might one do in this situation or that situation? Mm-hmm. And they got three or four simple solutions to take care of each issue that was raised. And that was absolutely beautiful about how it went around the table. And, somebody said, well, I might take care of it this way. Or somebody said, well, hey, you gotta ask yourself, well, what is the problem here?
Sometimes the answer you're going to get is a question.
Yes, and that's going to make you think all the more, and therefore you're going to deal with it more effectively.
In other words, if somebody has a better question than you, see, it's not about better answers, folks. It's about better questions.
Yeah.
The better the question you ask, the more the other guy, whoever's on the other side of that question, is going to struggle. I mean, as Harry from We the People always said, questions are a burden to others. So that's why they ask you the questions first. Mm. But actually, the minute they ask you a question, Mr. T has always told me, well, hey, they ask you a question, ask them one back.
It's about returning really to a childlike state and living in the now, you know. We all remember, like, when A child might ask us a question and we give an answer, right? And they'd ask
that. Why do I have to go to bed?
Would cause another. Yeah.
Because I said so. Why?
Yeah, why? And exactly, it would lead to 10 more questions.
Stop asking questions. Why?
Why? why do you say it's bedtime now? It's not dark. Yeah. You know, it's summertime.
I don't feel tired.
Yeah. Hey, I'm good to go.
Yeah. You know, I'm full of beans.
Yeah.
You look like you can do it, a kid.
are you tired?
Yeah.
You know, it's all of this and more, and it's about simply asking those questions, because if we don't ask those questions, hey, we're testifying against ourselves. And we got to stop testifying against ourselves, because unless it's an interview, you know, we really, really got to hit the point there that it's just not good for us if we keep testifying against ourselves in that manner.
Yeah, and
so return to a childlike state. And
look, it's the first book of jurisprudence, folks. If you haven't read, even the first chapter, it's on the site, there's a link to it on the site, folks. The first book of jurisprudence, in the first chapter, it's actually the first page of the first chapter, I think. It tells you almost everything you need to know about so-called law and legality. And effectively what it has is the following. The legal system can only deal with complex matters. But the law can, and like men, for example, who are where law resides with us, our law, right? We can deal with simple. Mm. Now, we can also comprehend the complex. But we, you know, the legal system cannot handle simple. So that's why they want you to give your name. Now think about it. Give me your name. Well, here I am standing in front of you. I'm here. You can see me. And yet you want me to, you know, scribble down something or to tell you something other than, well, you know, I'm here, am I? You know? I mean, just who are you is the dumbest question in the universe.
Yeah, but it's a question we don't ask very often, you know. How are you, and that type of thing is how normally we address each other if we really want to know, you know.
Yeah.
But what is your name?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's an old thing for Irish, isn't it? I mean, it's how are you doing?
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Doing, exactly. It's how are you being? How are you now?
No, how were you? I don't meet, you know, I didn't see you today. Well, how were you yesterday, Dale? How are you doing now? How are you?
Aren't we testifying against ourselves? Because, I don't know, can you swear? I certainly can't swear that my parents didn't bring home the wrong child from the hospital. You know, way back then they used to put 15, 20 kids in a room, and if somebody mislabeled somebody, hey, I wasn't very conscious at the time.
Well, I'm good to go because I was born at home.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've a better chance than most of us. So apparently I was put in a room with 20 other kids, you know, and that's what they did at the time. But, and introduce bottles straight away and that type of thing if they could, you know. It's like there, I had a cousin home from Germany there during the summer. And she was saying how, you know, German ladies, 95% of them breastfeed.
That's right.
And they're really questioned. It's not socially at all acceptable if you don't breastfeed.
Yeah.
And she was saying how, you know, she's really noticed here. She's nursing a young baby at the moment herself. And she's saying that, 90% of Irish ladies don't breastfeed. And I said, well, hey, you know, maybe that's because in the hospitals now they encourage you not to. Because it's all bottles and it's quite difficult and you don't get much advice. And they really, really actually seem to make it difficult because of their training.
Well, I'm going to say in fairness now, my missus in fairness was encouraged to breastfeed. And she did, so.
But that's an exception to
it now. It seems to be, yeah.
You know, that may have been way back when, you see. I'm talking about now.
I'm not.
You know?
We're going to take a quick music break while I beat the shit out of Dale. Back after these messages.
And after that, then, any ladies who wish to phone in and talk about breastfeeding, again, this is an open forum.
Only on video, of course, yeah.
It's an interactive radio here we have, so let's talk about anything, you know? I don't know how we got onto that one, but I'm just saying, you know, it's a lot of it is cultural perception.
I'm only joking, I'll throw it off.
A lot of it is cultural perception and trained beliefs, you know, in all of these areas, you know.
There you go, it's all coming out now.
It's all coming out now, yeah, it's all a makey up, he says there, yeah. I expected him sooner or later there to...
to pitch in.
To pitch in, yeah. He's got his oars out now, so I expect it. But... No, we really got to focus on what is and live in the now and that type of thing and deal with things as they occur and that and start critically questioning what is actually happening. So when we get all these offers in our doors and, you know, our kids start bringing home things out of their school bags and all that sort of thing, then it's all a makey up. He says he's on point there because we were talking about milk earlier on, and natural milk and organic milk and all the rest of it. He's just introducing another form of the...
conversation. Another formula? You know? Did you say formula?
Another form of the conversation or whatever. That was a joke. Please just get it. I know.
70% of Myers mothers don't breast meat, according to Dan. Don't breast meat.
Yeah, I think it's more over 90% now, Dan, if you if you speak to any of the...
That's actually shocking when you think about it. It really is.
It's a pity that, you know, that isn't encouraged in the first few days and that type of thing. But again, you know, that's perhaps more natural.
Here's one that amazes me. When you supposedly hear of people objecting to women breastfeeding in public, have you ever heard of a man ever objecting to maybe accidentally catching a glimpse of a woman breastfeeding and like, oh my God, I'm shocked and stunned? Let's face it.
Well,
that has to be coming from women, doesn't it, surely?
My wife breastfed, you know, perhaps yours breastfed. I don't see a problem with it. I've never objected to it. In fact, the only time I've ever seen objections to it was, I remember at a wedding in a church, a cousin's wedding or whatever, and I remember the mother of the bride was very, very upset that one lady was breastfeeding in the church. And I just couldn't understand it at all, you know.
Well, was the fellow over 40 that was getting breastfed or something?
No.
Sorry,
no,
I did throw that in.
Now, I did witness that at one stage. I remember being in a location where there were a lot of New Age travellers and that type of thing, as they called themselves at the time.
Right.
And I do remember walking into a public house at a festival and that type of thing years ago, and there was a young man... Or there was a young boy passed in beyond us. I just ordered a pint of Guinness at the time, I think. And my driver was beside me, and I was saying, what will she have, and that type of thing. And she was telling me what she'd have, and that my pint had landed. She was away parking the car or whatever. You know, those were the good old days when they walked 5 feet behind you.
Right, yeah.
5 paces was it behind you. But all that's changed now. I'm only joking. And I'm only agitating, you know. But see, would we get a few female callers there for the fun?
Yeah.
But... you know I'm only joking.
But they don't know that. They're going to hunt you down.
They're going to hunt me down. They're going to find me now after tonight. But anyway, right,
get to the point.
This young boy walked in past me anyway, and there was a lady standing on my left-hand side by a big old fireplace, and he was tall enough to help himself and that type of thing. And I remember the lady behind the bar said, Jesus Christ, would you look at that? And I said, I don't know. I said, I'm drinking Guinness, thanks very much. But... you know, he was tall enough to help himself and that type of thing, but hey, that was fine too, you know? He must have been 9 or 10 anyway, but obviously he knew the good stuff.
I'm going to say nothing. Okay. But I definitely think babies should definitely be, definitely. But that's just
me. But anyway, can we get back on point there, because breastfeeding is a little
bit... Before we get into serious trouble.
Yeah. Before we have too many callers there we can't handle. So... We were talking about truths.
Bullets in the post if we keep this up.
We were talking about personal truths there, and about making becoming a little bit more aware and making more informed personal choices. And we were talking about discussing these matters between a few more.
Yeah.
And we were talking about joining other groups and spreading the scattering a few seeds, like throwing about a bit of pixie dust there if we could. And trying to enliven the whole country in which we live and the people around us. And
I think it's time we let the listeners know that they are really so far ahead of the curve for so many people that we take an awful lot of what we've discussed and realised down through the last 5 or 6 years. We and now, an awful lot of us, we do actually take it for granted. We really do.
That was evident today at the meetup there. Any issue that was raised was bang, bang, bang. You know, here are options.
Here's 5 solutions, potential solutions for that. And none of them were...
classical.
There you go. Thank you. Well, that's a nice... I like that.
Yeah.
I'm still going to steal that.
None of them were trained or ingrained or schooled.
None of them involved, phone this solicitor and he'll... give him a big check and he'll do it for you.
Let's not discount that. That's the 6th solution, maybe, you know.
Sometimes that can work, right?
Depends on how bulging your pockets are and that type of thing. You want to pay somebody else to take care of your business, then,
apparently it's an option.
It's always an option. It's always an option. We're all about options here, folks.
That's it.
And meaningful options. So whatever runs for you, that's free choice, isn't it?
So they say.
Well, you know, there are a lot of advertisements around and that type of thing saying, hey, you know, you got a you got an insurance issue or an insurance claim, phone in now, you know.
Yeah. Send your dollars to.
Yeah, not this station. We'll certainly take a cut of that.
Okay, and I need to take a quick break unless you want to keep talking. I'll play a tune.
No, let's hit a tune.
So this one is for all the babies who weren't breastfed. That ended abruptly. Welcome back to peoplesinternetradio.com. Who was that? The Zombies. She's not there. That was my little pun. Anyway, no offence intended, folks. We're having a bit of gas tonight. It's nice to have a little bit of a light-hearted night, isn't it, Del?
It is occasionally, as long as we keep on point and that type of thing.
Well, we are, and we're on point.
In the main. Sort of. In the main.
We're not having points.
Well, let's get back. Okay, we were talking about breastfeeding babies.
Right.
So. Let's just round that off now that, right, okay, you have a mother and father, hopefully, in the room. They've just had a new child, okay? And they're presented with all these samples of, large company produced alternatives. So the option
they're being
is
offered contracts.
Exactly. That's my point, that they were, who'd really blame them for getting into that one? And it removes an option for them then down the road, so it's
easy.
They're
told it's easy, they're told it's convenient, they're told it's good for a baby, it's got added this, added that.
It's almost as good. Almost as good for baby, yeah. But maybe they'd want to think about that. So anyway, moving away from breastfed babies.
Backing away slowly. Or rapidly.
Well, leaving that one quite quickly. Before there's too much consternation out there. It's just another way of looking at it. Like, so we're surrounded with all these options all the time. Like, it's like the water thing at the moment and the property tax and, the increasing levels of taxes all around us. These are all apparently options. So we got to make choices all the time. So it's the choices we make that we got to live with. So.
Okay, well, let's deal with that. So Enda Kenny, for example, tomorrow announces new tax on grandmothers. If you're lucky enough to still have a grandmother alive and you're over 50, we're going to tax you, right? Something that ridiculous. I mean, people will... You see, I'd say that sometimes. People say, well, that's ridiculous, Vin. I say, well, is it any more ridiculous than taxing the water you drink to stay alive? Which is the more ridiculous? I actually think a grandmother tax is actually... less ridiculous than taxing water.
When God sends me an invoice for the rain that He sends us, hey, I'll certainly consider it.
Yeah, but think about it. I mean, let's say we say, well, we have to introduce this tax because anybody who's still fortunate or unfortunate, depending on how they get on with a grandmother, I suppose. But you have a grandmother who's alive and you're over 50, $3,000 a year, right? They could justify that, right? They could say, well, we got hospital beds and medications and home carers and we got all this stuff we got to provide for them. So a tax is perfectly reasonable, right?
Well, aren't they already doing that? Because we'll say, for example...
Well, that's kind of why I'm bringing it up.
If one is paying... Haven't they got a community equalisation thing there built into the VHI and health insurance and all that sort of thing?
Yep.
So... aren't they already pricing that in? So let's say I'm a 30-year-old single male wishing to I was there once, I was there once. I'm just waiting for second childhood, perhaps, But any day now. But and when it hits me, I'll tell you.
I'm all hungry, Brett.
Okay. So I'm there, a 30-year-old single male, right, and I'm told that because of this risk community equalisation factor, my €300 per annum health insurance, because I'm probably not that likely to get sick or have an accident or any of the rest of it at the moment, but because of all the grannies out there, I got to pay more. So that's perhaps already happening, that I'm being taxed effectively.
I was trying
for
to
the granny element.
Let me give you the challenge, right? This is a challenge that I've done at a few talks, and I've said to people, okay, try to name something that you're not taxed on. I only ever came up with one. And I really thought about it.
At the moment, it's probably just air. Breathing.
I could even argue that you're probably... you're smoking, right? So that as you pull that air in, you're being taxed on the portion that you're adding to it.
Do you see something in my hand?
I see smoke coming out of something. Well, we won't talk about that. Okay, but you see the point I'm making? Other than air was one that I thought of, right? The only other thing I could think of was and it's ridiculous, like all taxes, is how good looking you are. You know, imagine they had a handsome tax or a pretty tax.
Right.
And you had to go in front of a panel and they'd assess you and say, well, you know, you're a five. You know, the way have you, well, you know, she's out of your league, she's a seven, or you're only a five, and he's a ten, and you're only a four, you know.
Or you're a nine, what are you doing with her? She's only a three. Right.
There you go, right. Now, believe not, this, and just, I know people are going to balk at this, but this is actually going to come in. This is actually on the way. This is what really astounded me when I actually looked into it. This is coming, folks. Not today or tomorrow, but this is in the plan. And it was Brave New World. Remember, they had A's and B's and C's and D's. And this is coming. An A can have, you know, relations with a B, but they're encouraged to associate with other A's and so forth and so on. This is actually coming. This is part of their plan. It's bizarre, but it's coming.
Do you ever hear the expression, you're chattel in the eyes of the law?
Yeah.
Well, chattel or cattle, okay?
That's why your passport is ox blood.
Yes, and why you've got a P in your passport, that's your rating. But, okay, if you're chattel in the eyes of the law, okay, well, the legality, we'll call it, as distinct from law, before Pat Velden makes a point there. Okay?
Yeah.
If you're chattel in the eyes of the legality,
uh-huh,
right, then, you know, chattel or cattle, and aren't cattle already rated? They're highly rated, you know. I mean, if a farmer sends in his cattle to the factory for slaughter, he sells them at the mart, whatever, and the factory buyers buy them. Mm-hmm. Aren't they rated, and isn't he paid accordingly? So their O grade, he gets X, and their P grade, he gets X minus 40%.
Yeah.
Right? So this is already occurring in terms of other licensed entities. So if we're licensed, just through that perspective, can we not see this coming?
It's definitely coming. I mean, the structure of the system, folks, is so simple. It's everything that's on your side of the fence when the game starts, by the time the game is over, is on their side of the fence. That's the system. That's all it is. When the game began, you perceived the land, the plants, the minerals, and everything else as being, you know, yours, essentially, as in yours to use freely. I don't mean yours individually, but yours to use freely. By the time, you know, the music stops and there's only one chair left, the banker is going to be sitting on that chair. That's the system, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, he owns the chair.
Right.
I see Derek Mitchell there has a lovely comment, or a good comment there in the chat box there, wherein he says that as of December 2016, a lot of European countries, they're bringing in the microchipping of babies.
Yep.
That they'll be receiving, or the plan is that they'll receive a subcutaneous, which is under the skin, implant. And thereafter then they'll have a microchip.
I believe there's a reference to that in the Lisbon Treaty somewhere.
Yes. So the plan is already afoot, lads. Let's, you know, let's not discount all of these so-called conspiracy theories.
It's not a conspiracy
because
theory.
Most of these conspiracy theorists at this stage have been proven right in hindsight, you know.
You see, again, look, that's again, so-called popular media.
Yeah.
The mediocre, I call them. They put out this idea that, don't be listening to those crazy loons.
These, you know, memes, yeah, these memes.
Yeah, these are just conspiracy theory nutjob whackheads, pinheads, you know, not the phraseology they use. Anybody who asks a poignant question will be labelled in that regard. So, and that will be very effective on their platform. So you have to be prepared, if you're going to go onto their platform, to put up with that. And maybe to come up with creative ways to deal with it. Do you remember the woman who appeared on the Pat Kenny show, for example, and she started asking about the Bilderberg group? She was actually invited, actually.
She was invited onto the panel or whatever, yeah, but she...
Yeah.
She may have asked an extra question.
Yeah, and Pat Kenny was so... not just dismissive of her. He actively...
shouted her down.
Definite, yeah, but he was very, you know, meaningful and positive in that every time she spoke... he made sure to speak over her.
And then he moved it on to a politician whose the first words out of his mouth was, let's get real here.
Let's get real. In other words, that's not real. Now, I'm going to tell you something, folks.
Well, I've seen the video.
Enda Kenny, or not, Pat Kenny, I've been told he's a very high-level Freemason. Now, maybe he is, maybe he isn't, right? I'm not...
casting aspersions.
Well, I know. I have my opinions, shall we say, but however. He's also, I mean, I've actually met him. He's an extremely intelligent man. He really is. And if I'm going to tell you something about Pat Kenny. If Pat Kenny met you once 10 years ago, and he meets you now, he will greet you with your name in 10 years' time. Now, when you consider what he does and how many people he meets, that's extraordinary. He will not forget your name. The people they put into these positions are... are there for a reason. 99% of what they deal with will be dross. But see, when something like this comes along, that's their ability to be able to handle a situation like that, like he did with that woman. And in most people's eyes, he turned her into a kook in the audience. In most people's eyes.
Mm.
Let's face it, for the general population. And that's why he was in that position. That's, they put them in that, those positions to be able to cope with that when it occurs.
But some in the audience would look at that situation unfolding and they'd say, hold on a second here now, why was she shouted down, you know?
Absolutely.
Why was it switched off on her, like when she asked a very, very relevant question?
Well, our whole audience, for example, more than likely would be standing up, and if we were, you know, the bulk of that audience, we'd be on our feet going and pointing at this woman going, I think somebody needs to address this point that this woman raised.
Let's have a meaningful discussion about that which she has raised.
Mm.
You know, because it sounds to me like a very valid question. Doesn't it sound to you like a valid question?
I would have thought so, yeah.
But this is it, you see. But to most people sitting in the audience there, they'd be quite led astray quite easily.
Well, they heard the word Bilderberger group, and it doesn't mean anything to them. Why would it?
Well, it's...
Now, it will now, of course, because, of course, and now it's come out, Simon Coveney was there with Peter Sutherland, the uncrowned King of Ireland, they call him. I don't call him that. I have another expression I use, but not for polite conversation. But and at the same time, nobody should be underestimating these people. I mean, Simon Coveney, even, he's an extremely, extremely intelligent and ambitious man, as is Alan Kelly. You know, we can see who they're shining the light on. They put them under pressure. You know, a lot of people might think, for example, Alan Kelly, who's basically considered the water meter man at this stage, right? They might think that if the water meters don't go through, that somehow that this will destroy his career. Absolutely not. Quite the opposite, folks. Excuse me. He is demonstrating to his, I'm going to use the term, his owners. He is demonstrating to his owners that he will go to the wire for them. That's what he's doing. Whether he succeeds or not is not entirely what's going to make or break it for him. They will say, okay, well, we gave him an almost impossible task. How to tax the water in a country where it rains almost every other day. It's bizarre, right? But all things considered, I'm going to tell you, he's actually done very, very well in that regard. They had an interview on, what was it?
He was given an odious task.
Oh, yeah, they gave him a stinker.
Yeah, absolutely. A really rotten egg there. And he's presented it, he's packaged it up nicely, and he keeps on putting it out there.
Yeah.
So because we, you know, or most people keep hearing it all the time and that's happening, they think, hey, either it's inevitable, right, or it's current, or it's happening, what can we do, you know? And that's the opposite of
what I'm saying.
What
is. Just to get angry at the guy, and to maybe even get personal with the guy, That's not the solution here, folks. It can't possibly be. But as I say, we have to learn to look, step back a little bit and look from a different angle and say, well, who put him up to that and why? He is showing to somebody else his abilities. He said, basically, look, you give me a pig and a poke and I'll make a silk purse out of that sow's ear.
He's acting in the role and performing quite well, apparently.
He is. I mean, from their perspective, he's doing brilliant.
Mm. So, you know, you got to employ good actors if you want to present a certain point of view. Seems to be what's occurring around us. So we got to cut through all of that and see what actually is, because at the end of the day, it all comes back to contract.
I'll put it this way. Do you think Enda Kenny could have pulled off the water meters? Even back in the day when he was in the same position as Alan Kelly, or the equivalent?
No, I sincerely
not a hope. They would not have given it to him.
No.
It wouldn't have been given to him.
Even now with all the handlers and that type of thing.
No, he wouldn't have been competent.
No. Apparently not. I mean, would you buy a water meter off of Enda Kenny?
No. I don't think I'd buy it. Well, okay.
Sinead.
Right. We'll stop that right there. Thank you, Dan. Nice comment. Appreciate it. Look, folks, we are just shooting the breeze now at this stage. It's 11 o'clock. Feel free if you want to call in and shoot the breeze with us. You want to make a point, bring us back to something, or raise a point. As always, Vincent Temp 1 on Skype. 01443309 over the dog and bone. We do have an email, but there's no point in emailing in. But if you want to, you want to call in and raise a point, ask a question, feel free. We'll continue shooting the breeze here anyway.
Well, we're building a community here, so participate.
Yeah, participation. Yeah.
Yeah. And feedback, that's what it's all about, and a fair exchange of ideas and thinking and working things out and talking about them and developing simple solutions to apparently these quite complex problems, or they're certainly presented as very, very complex to us at times.
Exactly. How about that, folks? How about you have a problem or a situation where you think we don't have an answer for so far? How about throw that at us? I mean, that's one of the things I love about PIR and the structure and the way we've structured it collectively. And it's a collective structure. It's not mine, it's not yours, it's ours that we all built together. What I love about it is, if I'm giving a talk somewhere and I'm standing at the top of the room with a microphone or, wherever, and even the other guys too, we fear no question. And that's an incredible thing to be able to say. I'm not standing there nervous that somebody might ask me an awkward question I don't know the answer to. And it's not because I'm a feckin' know-it-all. It's because of the perspective. That's why we fear no questions, because of the passive stance.
Well, because it's passive there, you see, there are no gurus here. And that's quite different to,
But even people who were considered trolls or shills and all these titles that people come up with, I don't fear any questions from those guys either.
Mm.
That's probably why they tend to stay away from us.
Well, you see, you derive a sense of fun and it's uplifting thereby, what I notice about the PIR presenters, and there are quite a lot of them now, is that they have developed that sense of humour and that they're willing to discuss practically anything. I mean, you tune in on the different nights of the week here to PIR, and you'll hear all sorts of things that you may not have considered before, and you'll experience all sorts of things through listening to them. What I love about the medium is that. We'll say, going back there to looking at things through the eyes of a child, when we were young, we used to love, I certainly loved listening to, the adults talking about various issues and that type of thing. And I learnt a lot from their interactions.
Mm.
And kids do that. They study and they listen and, they watch the body language and they listen to the words that are being used and they develop their understandings.
Absolutely.
As a result. And that's maybe what this is all about. So again, participate, and if you've got an issue, phone in and let's talk about it.
Yeah, or don't, and we'll just keep shooting the breeze. I'm probably getting ourselves into more trouble than we're already in.
Well, I don't know what haven't we covered there tonight.
We're definitely in trouble somewhere tonight. I think we're definitely in trouble.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what calls in or who calls in. Sorry, yeah.
I'm going to make the point though. We used to get troubled. We used to, I think it must be at least, okay, Chatbox, correct me if I'm wrong, is it about a year, maybe even 18 months, since we last had anyone even attempt to troll people's internet radio? Jeez, it might be even longer.
It might be quite a while.
Whereas every other site on the internet is plagued by trolls.
Yeah. But that's because the guys in the chat box there, they
I actually used to actively invite them.
They'll spot them a mile away.
I used to go into other websites, forums, etc. Have a look, find the trolls, and say, "Hey, come on over to our site and see how you go." I used to bring them in, and the guys in the chat box would shred them.
Oh, they'd minced them. I've seen them do it, and it's brilliant the way they do it, passively, non-aggressively.
That's it. It's like a death of a thousand cuts, but it's a thousand paper cuts.
But this is it. You see, you got to be fairly discerning there to get on the chat box. You got to either be humble in yourself and asking sincere questions, because if you come in and you're acting as a know-it-all or as a troll or trying to divert people's attention from that which is true, you'll get sussed straight away.
Pat Feldon reckons it's over 3 years ago.
Is it?
Wow. I mean, that's incredible. Because you go onto any other site, you see, that's what I'm saying. If you go onto other sites, you'll see they're plagued by trolls. And we have none. And it's not because we built them all out. I mean, I actually used to go and encourage them, say, come on, come to the site.
Did they get frustrated then, or what happened to them at all?
They used to get mangled in their own logic, or their own twisted logic. And the guys just kept laying out simple, passive, logical, like it's like the tide coming in. they just kept coming at them, and at them, and at them. And they literally popped the fuse and had to leave. They left.
Is it because they didn't see it?
Well, you see, they used to try to say, "Oh, you're freemen on the land, or you're sovereign citizens, or you're this, or you're that." And we'd say, "Well, hey, I mean, let's talk about what that might mean to you," rather than saying, "No, we're not. Yes, we are," or any of that jazz. You see, there was no direct challenge. You see,
rather than getting angry.
Yeah, well, there is no anger. There's nobody to get angry at. Not in reality. I mean, because if you're getting angry, the only one who's angry is you.
But this is it. You see,
I mean, if I can make you angry, but I don't get angry, well, then who's the one who's angry?
Well, it's a two-way street, and we got to participate in it. And it's the flow of traffic, man. So we got to see it for what it is, and basically enjoy it, and develop that sense of humour.
Yeah, you're right, though. It's the childlike mind, and I don't mindset rather. Not that I'm not saying reduce yourself back to when you were 5 or 6, but it does actually help.
Critically question.
Yeah.
And if we're wrong to be passive, then hey, get aggressive and try that on us.
Well, maybe I need to go into that a little bit more. When I talk about being passive, folks, I'm not saying I'm a pacifist, okay? I'm not taking an advert out in the paper here saying, me, Vinnie Byrne, I'm a pacifist, and if you walk up to me in the street and just, punch me in the face, I'm not just going to stand there and take it. That's not passive. Passive means I'm not going to attack you.
Yes.
Right, so just to be clear for that, folks, if somebody punches me in the face, they're going to get everything I've got, right?
Well, if they deserve it, that's reasonable.
Yeah, punching me in the face, as far as I'm concerned, is you deserving it. It's like I've said, if somebody were to break into my home where my children and wife sleep at night, as far as I'm concerned, they're committing suicide.
Well, it's not
or at least I'm not going to worry whether they were or weren't, with my reaction. I'm going to react strongly to that.
Naturally.
Yeah.
And you'd be right, so it's always the aggressor who transgresses, and they...
It's the violator, yeah. Because if I break into someone else's home, I'm violating them. It's a violation. Mm. Now, let's say somebody broke in and I came downstairs and let's say I have, a big Bertha here in me hands, and I see they're at my fridge and they're actually eating food. I'm not going to beat the tar out of that guy, because that's somebody who broke in, they were desperate for food. That's a guy I might say, tell you what, sit down, I'll make you a meal.
Yeah.
And in the future, knock on my door at a reasonable hour, and that's okay, and if I have it, I'll help you.
Yeah.
But somebody who has my DVD player or my telly under their arm on the way out the window...
Well, he ain't going to eat.
They're in trouble. I just got to tell you, right?
Well, you'd want to check his teeth first. He can he eat it?
Right. Yeah,
No, it's... It probably all comes back to natural law.
It is.
And it's quite simple, really.
Listen, we hear it all the time on the mainstream media. He took the law into his own hands. And they say that because they want you to believe the law is not in your hands. It is in your hands. It is. That's a fact.
It always was and it always will be.
And never forget that. Ever, folks. You and I, we are the law. they got away with saying that because they kept telling everybody legislation was law. They said, oh, the two terms are interchangeable. They're synonymous with one another. No, they are not. Legislation is not law, and it never will be. It can't be. That's why it's called legislation. Law is thing, you know, law, for example, gravity is a law. The tide coming in and coming out. Apparently that's a law, you know. But if I write down on a piece of paper, no matter how many people vote for me, no matter how many people supposedly give me their mandate, if I decide, well, okay, well, let's make the tide coming in tomorrow illegal. The tide's coming in, folks. Doesn't matter if it's illegal or not, it's coming in, right?
It ain't going to stop that ebb and flow.
No.
So natural law really is where it's at.
Yeah.
Can you define legislation, Ben?
I don't like definitions generally. I like explanations.
Can you explain legislation?
An explanation for legislation would be somebody somewhere had an idea, and that idea they reckoned would benefit their version or their perception of them and their perceived group. And usually it's an idea or a notion that would be predatory upon others who are gullible. And that's my best description.
That's actually a brilliant explanation as opposed to a description, because it is that gullibility that is preyed on.
That's what I'm seeking.
And it's preyed on continuously.
If you are gullible, they will take advantage. I mean, look, how long have we been operating under the existing monetary / political system, right?
Thousands of years.
Right. Now,
that doesn't make it right, like, but we're just saying.
Right, absolutely. But that's not what got humanity as a whole, we the people, that's not what got us to where we are. What got us to where we are was natural law. That's what got, okay, I know some people say, oh, I don't believe in evolution, Vin, or I don't believe in this, or I believe in panspermia, or whatever, or maybe it was the aliens came down and fiddled with monkey genes, whatever you believe, fine. But from whenever that happened, to those couple of thousand years ago, I mean, they do say we've been here a few hundred thousand years in the meantime, it's that few hundred thousand years where we did our thing. That's what got us here.
It's only a recent creation or makey-uppy, really, you know?
Yeah, it's a blink of an eye
in the overall scheme of things.
Yeah, it really is. So, you know, the idea that legislation and, you know, you voted, therefore, you know, you voted for it, you accepted it. I mean, and they use these terms, don't they? They say, well, you accepted it.
You know, well, you gave me a mandate and I fulfilled it.
And see, think of even the word mandate.
Absolutely, yeah.
The man accepted that by such and such a date, again, a perception, that X, Y, and Z would be somehow in place. And that yesterday, you could park your horse and cart or your motorbike there, and tomorrow, you can still do it, but if you do it tomorrow, there's going to be a penalty for doing it. See, I think people forget that. They say, oh, no, you can't park there. No, you can still park there. You can still park. I mean, you know, you can park on someone if you want. They might not like it, but you can do it. You can still park there. But now there's a fine or a penalty in place. And they're going to tell you, well, you accepted it. You voted for us. We put it in place. You gave us the mandate. Well, the date's arrived.
Yeah.
Cough up.
Dan Arnold wants to know there. He says he thought you were a heterosexual, Vin. So what's this about man-date?
No, I'm a trisexual. I'll try anything. I'm kidding. In case my wife is listening.
Okay. Yeah. She could well be. Okay. So, look, it's our law, really, that we need to...
We are the law. We are the law. We are living law beings. That's what we are. I mean, a baby crying in a pram who's hungry. Why is he crying? Somebody's breaking the law. As far as he's concerned, somebody's breaking his I'm hungry and I need feeding law. Right? And I'm not being fed. To the baby, that's against the law. Right? Same with you. If somebody puts their hand over your mouth and nose and prevents air going into you, you're going to recognize somebody's breaking the law.
Well, when are we going to wake up? Like, I mean, if we're sleeping homeless in a sleeping bag and somebody pepper sprays us when we're handcuffed, I mean...
Your servant apparently pepper sprayed you.
Well, I don't know, but... apparently he was doing someone a favour, you know, or he was following orders or something like that, you know.
Or ordering followers.
Mm. Whatever happened there? Did that go to a tribunal?
Yeah, he was found guilty. What happened to the guard?
Yeah.
Oh, nothing.
So it's okay, like, that type of thing is okay while he's serving you.
Seemingly he was serving the shit out of him, as they say.
He was definitely serving him well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, well and truly. Right. So anyway, basically, right, look, the way I look at it is very, very simple, right? Man was created by God. I wasn't around, and I don't think you were either. But man was created by God, okay?
I was busy that day.
Man created government. Government created constitutions, laws, legality, statutes, acts, etc. Bylaws, la-di-da. Now, at what point in time did all of this legality, statutes, acts, and laws, man-made laws, governmental-made laws, usurp us and make us, or literally climb in between us and God?
Mm-hmm.
That's fundamentally what seems to be happening.
I can answer that.
When people accept that as being their reality, surely they're distancing themselves then from their birthrights and that natural law.
They're distancing themselves from everything, and I mean that everything. In other words, this thing here that's in front of me. Yesterday, for example, I may have perceived that to be something I could use. And today, because I've believed or accepted this idea or notion of legislation, I now no longer believe I have access to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. That's the whole deal. Yesterday, you could park here. Today, you can't. Yesterday, that was your home. Today, it's not.
Well, yesterday, I could go to any water font or fountain and help myself to as much water as God provided via the pipes that a man laid,
you
know? That men laid,
mm-hmm.
not actutes, statutes, or bankers, or any of the rest of it.
No,
so,
I mean, people need to realize, no matter what a politician writes on a piece of paper, no matter who he gives that piece of paper to, at no stage does the piece of paper lay the pipe, build a house, chop down a tree, you know, cut a bog. You know, that's us folks. We're the ones who do all that. The New World Order was not put in place by the bankers. We did it. We climbed the lampposts. We fitted all the cameras.
Yeah.
We did. We need to suck that up. It was us. There's no one else here. There's only us, right?
And hey, the guy that fitted the camera, he was paid by their system.
And he accepted.
The guys in the back room with the printing presses, they sent him some of that stuff that they printed for him.
I mean, every time they, inverted commas, pay you, they're basically saying to you, well, will you accept this as payment.
As consideration, yeah.
And we have up to now said, yeah, absolutely, we'll accept it. Happy days. We did so in ignorance and in nescience and all sorts of, you know, different levels in between that. But we did. We're just as guilty.
Hey, I only did what the job asked me to do, you know. Some guy said, hey, we want a few more cameras up there. Let's fit them, you know.
Yeah, microphones and lampposts.
And I got the contract.
Yeah.
In fact, I won the contract.
Used to be a time, remember we used to say things like, well, you contracted a disease. Remember that expression?
Yeah.
Now, they still use that for a certain type of disease, usually sexual.
I was going to say a sexually transmitted disease. Yeah.
Now, there's a reason they say that. Because it was a contractual.
You did contract, I'd imagine.
It was a contract.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, you certainly considered it before
you obtained
it.
It may have desired, you know, whatever, and it may have been unforeseen or unintended consequences, but they will tell you, the doctor will tell you, you have contracted syphilis, you have contracted gonorrhea.
Yeah. So we want to make ourselves less servile, really, and start questioning what is around us. Because this unquestioning
is that it? Is it the end of servitude? to, is it the end of servitude to the idea of something, and should we get back to the servitude, the proper, the correct servitude, where we serve each other?
Servitude of each other, yeah. Servitude of our communities. And
I mean, servitude in that regard.
Our reason and intellect.
It's not a diminished position, right? I mean, like, we're friends, right? And, you know, if I can be of service to you, I would gladly do so, and vice versa. See, but that's not oppression, right? But the other type of servitude is oppressive servitude. There's nothing wrong in serving, you know.
There's nothing wrong in issuing orders either.
Sure. There might be a lot wrong with following them.
There might be quite a bit wrong with following them, you know, without the, you know, making a determination on them, or yeah, you know.
Well, again, you're
realizing that you have
supposed to have a more. You see, the reason, for example, let's say I'm the general and you're the soldier, and I order you, I say, yeah, go and execute those 10 people.
Well, why can't I be the general?
Okay, you can be the general, right? So, and you tell me go execute.
So here's the gun.
I don't need no gun. So I'm told go execute those 10 people.
Right
now, you may have knowingly given me an unlawful order, even if you knew it was unlawful, right? And I go and, well, I'm a bit of an idiot, and maybe I haven't thought things through, and I go and do it. Let's say I go and kill 10 people. You still don't get into trouble, but I do. If a military tribunal is set up, it's my ass on the line because
I gave the order, but you pulled the trigger.
I pulled the trigger. And what's even, you know, people would still say, well, I mean, I've heard his argument saying, but the general shouldn't have ordered him to do that. That's it's actually irrelevant.
Hey, follow the chain of command.
But it's irrelevant because
this department over here deals with complaints.
Well, not only that, but he, the man, is supposed to have his own, which he does have, his own moral compass, as it were. We all have it. And
not if you're acting as a GI.
Well, you see, if
a government issue.
This is it. You see, this is what's killing soldiers. I mean, I think it's a fact now. Most people seem to know. I think am I right in saying that more American soldiers die of suicide than combat?
That's the sad thing about
it. It's bizarre.
It's the post-traumatic stress disorder, as they call it nowadays. You know, it's those flashbacks of the things that they had to do under orders and in circumstances that they didn't make a determination or a reasonable determination at the time. Because they're abroad, they're in a foreign country, mm-hmm. they're told, hey, here's a gun, go out there, and, you know, anybody you see there, shoot them, you know?
Yep.
But they wouldn't do that at home. They wouldn't do that at home in their own communities. So they're not functioning as they would in reasonable circumstances. They're heightened up. They're under orders. Like the guys, you know, I happen to be this morning there. I took a tour of Croke Park, right? And you know, there was quite a bit inside there about Bloody Sunday and things. So the guys that drove in there in that armored car and started shooting into the crowd, they were soldiers.
Yeah,
you know, they were following orders, but the generals were never convicted. Or any rest of it of war crimes or murder or whatever occurred. But hey, you know, it took 100 years for the British government to even analyse Bloody Sunday and even have a look at it, you know? So up until then, hey, it was an occurrence, you know, it's something that happens. You got these soldiers and you got this equipment and hey, we got to exercise a little bit of control here. And those type of things keep happening in history, and we never ever question we never realize that it comes down to the individual man or woman that pulls the trigger, that does these hyenas or conducts themselves in these hyenas fashions, you know. And there is no justification for unreasonable acts.
You see, that's what happens at some point in the court martial trial. The soldier will be asked, the soldier, I might add, right? He'll be asked, why did you follow that order? Why did you do it? You know, they were civilians or whatever, unarmed. Mm-hmm. They weren't convicted in a trial or, you know, none of our processes were applied. You just went and just shot them. You just committed murder.
Yeah, but that's the Nuremberg defense, you know, I followed orders. And it happens every single day, you know. If I was a public servant and I was operating effectively for the public, when somebody comes into me that requires housing, for example, It is my sworn duty to help them and aid them in any shape, manner or form that I can.
Now, it's all make you up, he put a great one in there. Maybe he made an honest mistake. Now, here's the difference. Common law kicks in here and says, because soldiers, folks, I don't know if you know this, but when a court-martial is under so-called common law, natural law in other words, where ignorance is no excuse, you don't get away with, I didn't know. They'll say, you didn't know, really? Even if you convince them, you genuinely didn't know, but you're not intellectually defective or mentally defective in any way, shape or form, they'll kind of say, well, that's a shame. Shoot him. Either way, you're going. This, I'm hoping this is what I think it is. If it is, this is a great George Carlin clip on language. Have a listen to this, folks.
I don't like words that hide the truth. I don't like words that conceal reality. I don't like euphemisms or euphemistic language. And American English is loaded with euphemisms because Americans have a lot of trouble dealing with reality. Americans have trouble facing the truth. So they invent a kind of a soft language to protect themselves from it. And it gets worse with every generation. For some reason, it just keeps getting worse. I'll give you an example of that. There's a condition in combat. Most people know about it. It's when a fighting person's nervous system has been stressed to its absolute peak and maximum, can't take any more input. The nervous system has either snapped or is about to snap. In the First World War, that condition was called shell shock. Simple, honest, direct language. Two syllables, shell shock. Almost sounds like the guns themselves. That was 70 years ago. Then a whole generation went by, and the Second World War came along, and the very same combat condition was called battle fatigue. Four syllables now. Takes a little longer to say. Doesn't seem to hurt as much. Fatigue is a nicer word than shock. Shell shock. Battle fatigue. Then we had the war in Korea, 1950. Madison Avenue was riding high by that time. And the very same combat condition was called operational exhaustion. Hey, we're up to eight syllables now. And the humanity has been squeezed completely out of the phrase. It's totally sterile now. Operational exhaustion. Sounds like something that might happen to your car. Then, of course, came the war in Vietnam, which has only been over for about 16 or 17 years. And thanks to the lies and deceit surrounding that war, I guess it's no surprise that the very same condition was called post-traumatic stress disorder. Still eight syllables, but we've added a hyphen. And the pain is completely buried under jargon. Post-traumatic stress disorder. I'll bet you, if we'd have still been calling it shell shock, some of those Vietnam veterans might have gotten the attention they needed at the time. I'll bet you. I'll bet you. But it didn't happen. And one of the reasons is because we were using that soft language. That language that takes the life out of life. And it is a function of time. It does keep getting worse. Give you another example. Sometime during my life, toilet paper became bathroom tissue. I wasn't notified of this. No one asked me if I agreed with it. It just happened. Toilet paper became bathroom tissue. Sneakers became running shoes. False teeth became dental appliances. Medicine became medication. Information became directory assistance. The dump became the landfill. Car crashes became automobile accidents. Partly cloudy became partly sunny. Motels became motor lodges. House trailers became mobile homes. Used cars became previously owned transportation. Room service became guest room dining. And constipation became occasional irregularity. When I was a little kid, if I got sick, they wanted me to go to the hospital and see the doctor. Now they want me to go to a health maintenance organization. Or a wellness center to consult a healthcare delivery professional. Poor people used to live in slums. Now the economically disadvantaged occupy substandard housing in the inner cities.
and they're broke. They're broke. They don't have a negative cash flow position. They're fucking broke. Because a lot of them were fired. You know, fired. Management wanted to curtail redundancies in the human resources area. So many people are no longer viable members of the workforce. Smug, greedy, well-fed white people have invented a language to conceal their sins. It's as simple as that. The CIA doesn't kill anybody anymore. They neutralize people. Or they depopulate the area. The government doesn't lie and engages in disinformation. The Pentagon actually measures nuclear radiation in something they call sunshine units. Israeli murderers are called commandos. Arab commandos are called terrorists. Contra killers are called freedom fighters. Well, if crime fighters fight crime and firefighters fight fire, what do freedom fighters fight? They never mention that part of it to us, do they? Never mention that part of it. And some of this stuff is just silly. We all know that. Like on the airlines, they say they want a pre-board. Well, what the hell is pre-board? What does that mean? To get on before you get on? They say they're going to pre-board those passengers in need of special assistance. Cripples! Simple, honest, direct language. There's no shame attached to the word cripple that I can find in any dictionary. No shame attached to it. In fact, it's a word used in Bible translations. Jesus healed the cripples. Doesn't take seven words to describe that condition. But we don't have any cripples in this country anymore. We have the physically challenged. Is that a grotesque enough evasion for you? How about differently abled? I've heard them called that. Differently abled. You can't even call these people handicapped anymore. They'll say, we're not handicapped, we're handicapable. These poor people have been bullshitted by the system into believing that if you change the name of the condition, somehow you'll change the condition. Well, hey, cousin, doesn't happen. Doesn't happen. We have no more deaf people in this country. Hearing impaired. No one's blind anymore. Partially sighted or visually impaired. We have no more stupid people. Everybody has a learning disorder. Or he's minimally exceptional. How would you like to be told that about your child? He's minimally exceptional. Oh, thank God for that. Psychologists actually have started calling ugly people those with severe appearance deficits. It's getting so bad that any day now I expect to hear a rape victim referred to as an unwilling sperm recipient. And we have no more old people in this country. No more old people. We shipped them all away and we brought in these senior citizens. Isn't that a typically American 20th century phrase? Bloodless, lifeless. No pulse in one of them. A senior citizen. But I've accepted that when I've come to terms with it. I know it's here to stay. We'll never get rid of it. That's what they're going to be called, so I'll relax on that. But the one I do resist, the one I keep resisting, is when they look at an old guy and they'll say, look at him, Dan. He's 90 years young. Imagine the fear of aging that reveals. To not even be able to use the word old to describe someone. To have to use an antonym. And fear of aging is natural. It's universal, isn't it? We all have that. No one wants to get old. No one wants to die. But we do. So we bullshit ourselves. I started bullshitting myself when I got to my 40s. As soon as I was in my 40s, I'd look in the mirror and I'd say, well, I guess I'm getting older. Older sounds a little better than old, doesn't it? Sounds like it might even last a little longer. Bullshit, I'm getting old. And it's okay, because thanks to our fear of death in this country, I won't have to die. I'll pass away. Or I'll expire like a magazine subscription. It happens in the hospital, they'll call it a terminal episode. The insurance company will refer to it as negative patient care outcome. And if it's the result of malpractice, they'll say it was a therapeutic misadventure. I'm telling you, some of this language makes me want to vomit. Well, maybe not vomit. Makes me want to engage in an involuntary personal protein spill. Thank you all.
The one and only George Carlin. Welcome back to peoplesinternetradio.com. Yeah, yeah, many nails hit on head indeed. And I love that clip. Actually, let me just get you the YouTube link for that, folks, because...
You'd want to listen to that a couple of times and dissect it, really.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Because, there we go. If you haven't seen it, share and spread and inform. And it's educational on so many levels, because this is what we're doing. I mean, listen to an economist, a so-called economist. They call these people economists, and they put them on radio, the talking heads. You can listen to what they say, and you won't know anything about anything when they're done. You won't understand it. You won't get the concepts. You won't know anything about finance or... You know, the equity swaps, divergent funding options, and they use this language. I actually even doubt they even know what the hell they're talking about half the time.
Central funds.
Yeah, but you see, it's like, well, you know, what was the latest there? What was the last big one they were doing? What the hell do they call them? Can't think of it. It'll come to me in a minute. Hang on, I'm gonna play one more clip.
They use a lot of words, like, but they don't really hit any real meaning, really, in them. You know, they don't really convey anything.
Here we go. This one is just, this nails it on the head. If you haven't heard of this guy, folks, you're gonna love this one. So. You should be talking while I'm doing this. I'm distracted. You stop.
No, I'm watching what you're doing there, because people out there, you gotta realize what's happening here, right? There are at least four screens open, right? And there's a lot of things moved here from.
I usually talk when I'm doing this, but you're distracting me, so I can't talk and do it at the same time. I normally do.
That's okay.
Okay, this is Jonathan Pye reporting. Have you heard this?
Wait till you hear it.
Left the Shanghai composite down by 0.7% and Japan's Nikkei index tumbling 0.6%. The upshot of it all, well, a bit of a scare on the London markets, and it's safe to say a bit of a headache for George Osborne. I honestly don't have a clue what I just said there. No, one word in three I got of that, and I was the one saying it. Tim, how long have I got? Yeah, can you just explain something for me here? All of it? The growth rate in the last quarter has slid. I mean, I may as well be saying big have dropped 0.4%, have grown to pre-crash levels, and the Chinese is steady. It doesn't, it's just words. It doesn't, I mean, you know, that to me isn't economics. I don't even know how to say the word, you know? I mean, economics to me is, can I afford a house? Can I afford to buy a house? Where do you live? London. No. Can I afford to rent a house? Where do you live again? London. No. What can I afford then? A cupboard under the stairs for 500 quid a month. You read that in the paper the other day. The 500 quid a month for a cupboard under the stairs. How can that possibly be a healthy housing market? Well, let me explain. Blah, blah, blah. Growth. Blah, blah, blah. Record profits. Record profits. Record profits. Here's the f***ing news. Here is the real f***ing news. Those bastard banks that destroyed an entire planet's economy just a couple of years back have just recorded record profits. Yay! We do that as if that's good news. I'm sorry. Hang the bastards. I don't understand. What do you mean, what don't I understand? It's economics. I don't, you know... I think people sort of get it. They sort of go, okay, so we cut tax credits, but we don't pursue tax dodgers. Why economics? You know, we hate human rights violations unless you're China or Saudi Arabia. Why economics? Our governments are perfectly happy for corporations to rip apart our forests like they're ripping up an old pissy carpet and then take a massive toxic in our oceans. We don't really care about that. Why economics? NHS cuts, economics. Trident, oh yeah, economics. But can someone explain the economics of it? Right, and that's my job. That's my job. So here goes. Let's explain the economics. Interest rates are up, GDP is down, your mum's playing footsie with Dow Jones, and my a**hole's full of jam. What? Oh, sorry. Got a bit carried away there. Okay, yeah, I'm ready. I just wish that someone could explain exactly what it all means. That's all. Well, let me begin by explaining exactly what it all means. One word, growth. The Chancellor George Osborne today...
And that, folks, is Jonathan Pye explaining, or rather not, economics. It's just, it is a satire, satirical piece, folks. But, you know, if you haven't seen Jonathan Pye on YouTube, I highly recommend it. Now, the link I gave you there, that was played on RT, I believe. Which is astounding.
Do they slip up now and again?
Well, no. I mean, I think they purposely did it. So, there is a YouTube channel, and I'm going to give you the link. I think his real name is, yeah, it's actually at the top there. Tom Walker, 78. I think that's actually the guy's real name. Or as real as, you know. I just did another faux pas there.
As real as anything.
Supposedly. Yeah. That's what he answers to, if you ask.
I suppose that's the
YouTube channel there.
The point is that it's all presentation.
Yeah.
You know, it's all in how you present it and the words used and the meaning derived from same. So if we accept that all this is real and meaningful, then hey, it's really real and meaningful.
It's presented as if, you know, when the camera's okay, 3, 2, 1, we're rolling, right? So he'll do the news, and then okay, cut, and in the cut parts he goes, "What the hell have I just said to these people? I don't even know what I've said."
This is all economics. Derivatives
and swaps and equity swaps. What the hell is all that?
Pink slips, green slips.
Right, and then he's talking in his earpiece. And the guy in the earpiece is going, yeah, look, get it together, John. You know, just get it together. Just say, read the card, right? Just read what it says in the card. And he goes, but what am I saying? You know,
it's all about CFDs and OBQs.
Yeah, and 1, 2, 3s and ABCs and you and me. But apparently, it's the and you see, in fairness to David,
it's economics.
He came up with a perfect word for these people. I don't mean Jonathan Boy, but the people who do it, they're not reporters. They are repeaters.
Presenters.
No, they just repeat. Hmm. They repeat what they were told.
They read the script.
Yeah. And they just re-present it. Somebody somewhere decided, this is what's going to be told to the hoi polloi, the unwashed masses. And it's your job to do it. And we want you to look smart and intellectual, and we'll suit you and boot you. Go ahead, cough. And we'll, you know, we'll allow you to be a man about town, and you know, we'll interview you in you know, highbrow magazines, and we'll let people think you're a bit of a playboy or a playgirl, or you know,
and we'll present you as such.
We'll give you status, and that the very fact that we say you have status, well, that will actually give you status. That's how it works. I mean, how do famous people become famous?
Hey, they're presented as such.
They used to have to earn it, you see. Fame used to have to be earned. Nobody earns fame anymore, generally. You know.
It's like is it the X Factor there, right? What you see is actually maybe the fourth cut.
If you're lucky.
So, you know, these people have been through the mill. They know exactly what they're going to do. They know exactly what they're going to say. And they know exactly how to react to same. And they're going to present it then as such.
Yeah, I mean, do you
seriously
think...
It's not the first cut. It's not real. It's not reality. It's not reality TV, if you like. It's what's presented. And therefore, it's the listener. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. And there are some very fuddy-duddy beholders out there.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean... Are we supposed to honestly believe, for example, that when somebody comes out on X Factor, for example, and they look like somebody, say, from a building, so some Joe comes out, looks like he's a typical builder, and suddenly he starts singing a song that would make Alec Jones cry. Not Alex Jones, Alad Jones, right? And do people really... And you know, you'll see the judges now. Oh, shocked! They're shocked! Do we really think they don't know every single thing there is to know about this guy in advance? They know everything, folks. Everything. It's a sales pitch.
It's a presentation.
Yeah. It's a magic trick. It's a con job.
It's a program.
But you will like it. It's emotion porn. That's what I call all those things. They're emotion porn.
Fear porn, but
But it is emotion porn. It's like soap operas. They're emotion porn. They're designed to give you your supposed. You see, people who are in, say, relationships that they're not happy with or whatever, they can. You hear them all the time say, "You can relate to this." Relate. It's a very interesting expression. To relate. Think about that. What's relate mean to you?
Well, it's not a first-hand experience. It's a presented second-hand.
It's a substitution.
Substitution, yeah.
Yeah?
That's a good word.
Now, because it's a substitution, it's like...
It's art imitating life, as GMC has
been. Yeah, and what it does is people then begin to consume art. And as that consumption grows, you actually become dependent upon it for your emotional fix. That's why people follow soap operas. I hate to say, is it generally women? Well, it's definitely more women than men, definitely.
It might have been more so women, but nowadays it's men and women, children and, and teenagers.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, they've designed the soap operas that way.
They present to their audience and they, you know, they expand their audience and their targeted groups.
It was one of the things that, for me... It's
by design.
The death of sci-fi, for me, was when they started to introduce soap opera storylines into sci-fi. You know, Star Trek, for example, the original Star Trek TV series... That was sci-fi. Mm. Next Generation was a sci-fi themed soap opera.
Green screened.
Suddenly I'm looking at, even though Kirk would have, snogged the alien, attractive alien, right? But in Next Generation, well, they had to have an emotional discussion about how they felt about things. And I was looking at this going, what the hell is that doing in my sci-fi?
Beam me up,
I was like,
Scotty.
You're pissed in my bovril, right? It didn't belong. It doesn't belong. I'm fearful of going to see the new Star Wars movie. Mm. It doesn't belong in there. I mean, a romantic storyline is one thing.
It's a representation of that which was. So, it's going to be very, very doctored. It's going to be very, very aligned with... the message that they wish to present.
Yeah, but you see,
it's going to be highly scripted, and it's going to really, really... try and reinforce the memes that they're really trying to put out there.
Well, see, I want to see the new Star Wars movie because I'm a Star Wars fan. I always was. I mean, it was Star Wars, right? It was what it was.
Tell the truth, you're a Trekkie too.
Absolutely. But, and I used to actually sit and watch them, and I'd be infuriated when this would be injected into the middle of my Star Trek experience, right? Mm. Because the thing that Star Trek did originally was, at least it tried to use, even the way out scientific theories, but it still tried to make some semblance of, well, what would happen if this was actually real? You know, if entanglement, for example, is genuine and real, what could that mean 1,000 years in the future if we had all this technology? But how this guy felt about that guy, and that guy felt about this girl, that doesn't belong in sci-fi. I mean, tell me I'm wrong, guys. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, it's the programmed interpretation of same.
I feel like somebody's, interfering with it. So if I go to see the new Star Wars movie, and if it has anything like that, I'm literally going to be sitting there in that chair screaming inside.
It's their choice of 15 takes. You know, because each scene is highly scripted.
It shouldn't
and then
even
we,
be written into it. You know, it's like a square, somebody put a square peg in a round hole, and I want it out. Already I've heard rumours, social justice warriors, for example, are already saying, no, there's this issue and that issue and the other issue. And I'm like, no, it's sci-fi. That's the whole point of sci-fi. There are no issues. It's sci-fi. It's supposed to be what it is. You know, okay, I'm going to get carried away into something. I'm going to stop. I like my sci-fi, okay? I don't like people fiddling with it.
And it's that fiddling that we're talking about, though.
Yeah. Well, again, I like my logic and reason, right? Yeah. I don't like anybody sticking emotion and emotional responses into a logical discussion. I'm thinking, well, how you feel about X or Y is irrelevant.
It's not really.
We're
the
having
point.
A logical discussion here. What the hell are you doing sticking emotion in, right? Mm. Doesn't belong. Mm. You know, I mean, we get emotional on here, and you know, sometimes emotion belongs in the radio, and other nights it doesn't. But when it does, we kind of know when it does, because you know it'll be a collective. Yeah, we're all feeling it. You know, but okay. Now you see, I'm out of control on that one.
That's okay.
I'll stop. Change the subject quick.
Yeah, look. We'll define you as a Trekkie and we leave it at that. Okay.
Yeah. Step away from the sci-fi.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
So stepping back from that one. So back on point. Is it fact or fiction? That's what we're, you know, that's the question. What are we being presented with? And we got to make our own determinations in relation to the same, because if we don't, then we're being controlled. So
only we can.
Only we can. As in
we need to realize that. You know, I mean, I've been saying there recently, look, an interchangeable term, not a synonym, but an interchangeable term for sovereignty is uniqueness. Like, for example, there's uniquely on the chat, for example. But we are all unique. You know, you'll hear people talk about sovereign citizens and they're a threat and domestic terrorists and all this type of junk we're hearing. But, I mean, are those talking heads seriously trying to tell us that we are not unique individuals?
But of course we're unique. If we're not unique, then what the hell are we at? We must be
part of the collective, the Borg.
But that's...
Oops, I got sci-fi again. Sorry, I'll step away.
But that's, you see, how... that's the manner in which we might be approached, or that's how we might be treated if we don't express our uniqueness, you know, or our individuality. So everybody on the chat box there is unique. I mean, you've uniquely, Stephen, Paul Carr, Keith, Derek, you know, everybody expresses things slightly differently in terms of their own experiences, their life experiences, their own outlook, their own views. And that's really what we're talking about tonight, is that each one of them, are us really, but we're a collective in that sense. But at the same time, each one of us see things in our own unique way. You know?
Well, I think the collective is a collective of individuals. The collective is not the collective of the collective.
It's not the Borg.
No, I mean, it's not socialism, communism, all
or any other ism.
Isms, yeah. They would sell you the idea that somehow the collective has its own consciousness. Well, like an ant colony. They say an ant colony, it's a collective. No. The ant colony, folks, every ant is individual. Every ant is unique. They work together. We're the ones applying the idea of the hive mind to them.
Yeah.
We don't know they have a hive mind. That's our creation. And these people have said, well, the so-called would-be controllers, the psychopathic despots, why don't we take this idea, we'll sell them the idea of the hive mind, and then we'll let them think that, in fact, you're part of the hive mind too. And we are not. We cannot be.
Well, we could never comply with all this legislation. I mean, there are thousands of books. And
you're probably breaking, you know, God knows how many pieces of legislation sitting right here.
Well, I mean, you know, we discussed a few themes there tonight, and certainly we'd... you know, if we were to be politically correct, we'd probably upset a few.
I hope so.
I hope so, yeah. And so do I. But if we don't...
That.
Yeah, I know you mean it, and I mean it also. But And I agree with you there. But if we don't, then what the hell are we talking about? Because we have to talk about real issues. And we have to, you know, provoke a little bit of response. And we have to alert our community of what is and what may be happening and what may be coming down the road, whilst at the same time talking about simple solutions to deal with same.
Yeah.
And that's what this is surely all about. Well, and if we don't talk about these things, then we're falling back into the old memes of the, you know, the program media and that type
of thing. If we're not going to talk
real
about these
things. So let's get real as was in that.
If we're not going to talk about them and if we're not going to explore them, we may as well turn off and become obedient, compliant, mutual.
Subservient.
Bow.
Dotto.
Kowtow.
Yeah.
You got stuck, did you?
Subjugate ourselves.
No, I was going to bring in a, you got it. You went a bit slow.
No.
Okay, I'll give you 5 out of 10.
That was a hyphenated one, so, you know, you got to. Give me a second there, you know. I got to get the hyphen in there. Give me a moment.
Okay. We're out of time, folks. We got 3 minutes to go. Super Big Bad Man is up next with Cancel the Cabal. You have been listening live to People's Internet Radio. I've had the wonderful Delamitri on with me tonight. I'm going to shake your hand. That was a great experience tonight, Del. Really appreciate it. And folks, we'll talk to you again soon. There we go. That was from Stephen. Ready for the stream. Good man. And I'm going to leave you with this. Bill Withers, Ain't No Sunshine, Just Cause I Love It. Good night. Hey, what? I'll just call us off.
Mahan Fair.